Bill.
They're bringing chairs with them. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2096 is the Omnibus Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division bill. And I just want to start by saying that, well, two things. I want to talk about the one-time and the ongoing money for just a moment and the, how they interrelate in this bill. Obviously, the bill that you have in front of you is the ongoing money bill, and the one-time money is not an actual bill. It's more of a recommendation from our committee, but I'd like to present them today to the committee side by side because I think it's helpful as the policy is kind of mixed between both the one-time and the ongoing money. What we did in this bill was try to prioritize some key areas that were important to myself and to members of our division, including clean water and the clean water legacy, continuing funding for that and increasing funding for that, a number of forestry initiatives, which were also a high priority in the governor's bill, renewable energy and next-generation biofuels was another key priority both for the Senate as well as for the governor. We tried to do some good work in the area of funding invasive species prevention of spreading of invasive species in both terrestrial and aquatic areas. And we also included some emerging pollution issues in this bill. So those are some of the highlights. What I'd like to do is let the staff, Mr. Mueller, the fiscal analyst, and Mr. Knopf, the research analyst, go through the spreadsheets and go through the line by line of the bill. And then we could talk about the one-time spreadsheet after that. And members, maybe would you like, maybe we should pass that out now? That's already out?
It's, okay, it's been great. Distributed.
So you should have a copy of the one-time spreadsheet as distinguished from the regular spreadsheet, and so we can talk about those side by side and the changes that have been made in the one-time money. So why don't we start by going through the bill, and then I can explain some of the changes that have been made since the budget division.
Okay. Mr. Mueller, are you going to do that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'll be working through the spreadsheet. Hopefully what was passed out in your packet should be an eight-page spreadsheet. The first four pages show change items for all funds. The next three pages after that is sort of a subset of that, of just change items with the general fund, and that tie out to the target of $20 million for 0809 that was available for this bill. And then the last page of that eight-page packet would be the revenue changes that are contained in this bill. And then what was just passed out, and we'll get to this maybe at the end, is a separate front and back spreadsheet that shows we actually had two different one-time proposals, one that deals with clean water and one that deals with other projects that were within this division. So first I'll go through the spreadsheet that's called Senate File 2096, Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget, Senate Change Items, All Funds. And the way this spreadsheet works is I'll be working off column E, and that shows the Senate change items versus the February forecast. And the first, like, three line items under each agency show the February forecast, and then underneath it show the change items. So this is a summary level of the change items that are in this bill. I have a more detailed spreadsheet that's like 18 pages that shows everything by within each division of each agency, but that's more for the bean counters maybe. But so we'll work off column E, and I'll go down through all the Senate change items. The first one we have is the compensation adjustment under PCA. Again, the this bill recommends a 3.25% general fund increase that's on top of the that's over and above the governor's 2%. And you'll see how much additional that cost in column F, where we have the Senate minus the Gov. So that costs $168,000 more than the governor, or $433,000 over the base. The next item, and that is the only general fund change item in PCA. The next items are remediation change, or not changes, remediation, environmental fund changes. The first one, maintenance of service for air programs, it's a, there's sort of a in law, it says we have to follow a certain amount of a set level of increases within the air service programs on the environmental fund, so that's that item. The next ones are, we're Green Fleet proposals under the governor, which we did not adopt, but we do have a proposal in our one-time spending that addresses some of those. The next one, the Senate is carrying $3 million under the environmental fund for SCORE grants. That was also in the governor's budget. The Senate has $6 million out of the environmental fund for additional costs for permitting ethanol and other mining and other new industries. The governor had this as a general fund change item. We're doing this with environmental money, and it's just one time. The next item is line number 19. This is a proposal from Senator Sieben, and there's some language that passed the Health Committee just recently, and we might be talking about that later here, but we're carrying $1 million of money under the environmental fund. $400,000 of this per year will be transferred to the Department of Health to operate that program. The last one is the governor's proposal for additional costs under the remediation fund, $52,000 per year that will be transferred to the Department of Health for health monitoring. Mostly well testing and such. This is an increase in an existing program. So the total change items for all funds is $11.322 million. Next, we have the Minnesota Zoo.
Okay.
We have two change items in the general fund. Governor's rec for $250,000 per year for increased utilities costs. We have the compensation adjustment at the Senate level.
I know.
And then the lottery in lieu shows as a change item, but this is really should be a base item, and the Senate carries this as an ongoing base amount. Next, we get to the Department of Natural Resources. Their November forecast is $6.35587 million, and then following is all the change items. The first two minerals management numbers are from the governor's budget. Basically, the minerals management in the previous biennium, they had sunsetted the funding for this area of the budget because they were paying for it out of the minerals management account, which was the natural resources fund account. This proposal uses up the money or uses some of the existing money out of that account for 08 and then switches that funding over to general fund in 09 and ongoing. So that costs a tails of 2.6 per year into the tails for that change item. That was in the governor's budget. The next item, line 44, is land asset management, which is a partial funding of a governor's initiative to help the department out with some of their technical costs that are associated with buying and selling of land and such items. Compensation adjustment, again, for the DNR, this costs the Senate proposal costs another $2.355 million on top of above the governor's proposal for compensation adjustment. Clean Water Legacy is being carried in our one-time funding. The ethanol water supply of the governor's proposal is actually in our one-time bill, a partial funding of that. There's a suggestion by the governor to fund more of the forestry initiatives out of the dedicated forestry account within the natural resources fund to the tune and taking that money out of and not funding it with the general fund. The Senate adopted that to the tune of $3.167 million per year will be of forestry services will be carried out of that dedicated fund and not from the general fund. Yeah. Next, the governor funded the lands records management system from both general fund sources and some new natural resources fund and game and fish fund. The game and fish fund and the natural resources fund changes occur in this bill, and that was at the governor's level. And then in addition, our one-time proposal carries some additional dollars for that land records management system. Next, we have line number 53, which are some additional forestry initiatives. There's $3 million for the biennium for the forest management investment that is ongoing. So general fund for forest land asset management as a governor's level or governor's initiative, $1 million. And then reauthorizing the sustainable forest. And then there's also a council that goes along with this. And reauthorizing that, that was a governor's initiative also, tune of $1.56 million. The next items that are zeros are actually carried in our one-time proposal. Interpretive services, there's a small additional change item from the governor of $300,000. Non-motorized forest rec trails was the governor's initiative for $800,000. The increase in non-motorized trails is a Senate initiative of additional dollars that would go to that area of the budget for $500,000 per year, basically increase operating costs within the DNR for in the non-motorized trails area. Wild and Scenic Rivers was a governor's initiative of $150 million. There's the Project Wild, which received a little bit of additional funding from three different sources, the General Fund, the Game and Fish Fund, and the Natural Resources Fund. On page two, the Senate carried the governor's, or went along with the governor's initiative for additional $300,000 per year for conservation officer training. We're doing the, there's sort of a multi-level approach to dealing with invasive species. And there's, this is tied to some revenue changes that are, I'll go through when I get to the last page of the spreadsheet. But basically, the Senate is adding additional $1.06 million for land-based invasive species. And that all comes from the general fund. And then there's a small amount of natural resources fund of $244,000 per year. And this is tied to an increase in non-resident hunting fees of $2 or $5. $5 per year. The Prairie Wetlands Initiative was sort of a two-pronged approach from the governor using general fund and game and fish fund. The Senate's using the doing the game and fish fund approach, but making it one time. And I believe we also have a little bit in the one-time funding bill for Prairie Wetlands. Yep. The Senate is going along with the governor on the wildlife disease management. This is to address the bovine tuberculosis up in the northern part of the state. There's also money, in, as you recall, when we went through the ag budget last week, this is sort of a multi-agency approach to this issue. But the $264,000 per year, and the amount goes off into the, or decreases in the tails. Here on line 76, you'll see the offset from where we made the reduction in the general fund for forestry services, and this is the increase then to the natural resources fund of the same amount. Then there are some additional forestry proposals that are that will be funded out of this dedicated forestry account. Governor's level for additional FTE to help cover the cost of associated at the DNR with timber sales. Some one-time money for forestry improvements, one-time out of the Natural Resources Fund. The governor had this ongoing, but as we looked at the overall structure of this fund, we decided to make some of these appropriations one-time because some of them may have not been sustainable over time out of that dedicated forestry account. So that one and the forest road maintenance, again, we made one time. The ecological classification is another forestry initiative. Invasive species, there's another initiative to tackle that in the forestry area. And then the reinventory of state lands, $400,000 per year, that also is the governor's initiative. The governor had a change in the ATV gas tax dedication. I know you guys talked a little bit about that when Senator Murphy's bill came through here, but this does not adopt that change item. And the one that was in Senator Murphy's bill, I believe, was removed on the floor.
Sony's not here.
However, this bill does increase ATV fees. The sort of they pay a fee every registration fee every 3 years, and that increases that and dedicates the funding to basically $500 new money per year in trails, $1 million per year in enforcement and education, and then another $75,000 per year would be going to Ecological Services, and this basically doubles the amount that goes to Ecological Services. There's language in here that adds designations to two new canoe routes. Senator Dylan Fredrickson had bills in on that. The maintenance of service under Natural Resources Fund, this was a governor's proposal where they carried a 3.25% increase from their other funds. The forest land use special permits is the governor's initiative. There's a revenue that we're carrying in that one. The next line, 93 and 94, is just a switching of funding from Natural Resources Fund over to a special revenue fund. The state park increase in fee increases is tied to a $750,000 per year ongoing. It's tied to an increase in camping fees at state parks. The snowmobile grant and aids at $700,000 per year is actually money that's already in the snowmobile account. They raised their tabs or their stickers and trail stickers a couple years ago, and the money is coming in faster than they expected, so they're able to allocate some additional money per year for trails. Next, we get to the other part of the invasive species proposal. This deals with aquatic invasive species at $575,000 and then $1.75 million per year ongoing. And this is tied to an increase in registration fees for boats and also a surcharge on non-resident fishing license. Next, we have a line item that we're carrying for a voluntary deer hunter donation. This is a Senator Erickson Roach proposal. The cost number I'm carrying here might be a little high, but the original fiscal note had it as a mandatory dollar checkoff. The Senate language makes it voluntary, but the DNR hasn't done it, or we haven't had them do a new fiscal note based on the voluntary amount. The voluntary amount could be this amount or it could be something less, but it's a statutory appropriation that drives right off the revenue. So the Let's Go Fishing proposal, the Senator Saxhawk proposal, will be coming out of the Game and Fish Fund at $350,000 per year one time. Then there's another governor's level maintenance of servants increase from the Game and Fish Fund. There's a couple other small governor's items that we did not do in this bill, shifting some treaty costs over to the general fund out of the Game and Fish, funding a South Metro Wildlife Management Coordinator out of the Game and Fish Fund. We did fund a new Game and Fish Fund budget oversight person. We had a little bit extra money for boat access. And there's a governor initiative for angler and hunting retention and recruitment, $300,000 total. That was the governor's level. A fishing attorney license fee increase, that ties to a fee increase to help cover the cost of them administering fishing tournaments. The roadside for habitat is a governor's initiative, and Senator Chaudhry proposed some additional money for that of $100,000 over the governor's. Then the last item there, the governor proposed shifting a bunch of the accounts that deal with the habitat stamps for, like, turkey stamps and trout stamps and duck stamps, switching that all over to statutory, but the Senate is keeping them as direct appropriations. And the negative there basically is taking that proposal as a whole. One of the accounts, the land acquisition account, they had in their forecast, they had assumed a much higher amount than what they were really supposed to. So the negative there is basically versus the forecast, but that was just because one of the accounts we had to adjust because they were carrying too high of an expense. So basically, under the Senate, when you consider all different funds, there's $50.017 million of new money for the DNR just in this bill, and then that's not counting what's in the one-time bill. Next, we have Met Council Regional Parks. The governor had no increase. The Senate is proposing a $750,000 ongoing increase for Metro Parks. This basically makes it even with the state parks increase. That's out of the general fund. The Minnesota Conservation Corps, the governor had no new increase for this. The Senate is proposing $250,000 per year of increased funding for the Conservation Corps. Next page is the Board of Water and Soil Resources, or Bowser as we call it in division. The Clean Water Legacy, again, is being carried in the one-time bill. The Drainage Work Group, this was in the governor's proposal for additional staffing to help cover the cost of the drainage work groups. This is basically to help them count the no net loss legislation. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The assessment teams for help with local drainage authorities. And Mr. Knopf will go through some of the details in some of the riders and language later on dealing with some of these proposals. There's a couple other items there with the drainage work group that we did not do. The Wetland Conservation Act had some grants that we were not able to do. The Wetland Conservation Act staffing of $1.12 million, the governor's rec, is included here. That's ongoing. Some additional money for the Area 2 floodplain management, $35,000 per year is added to an existing program for this. The operations increase was in the governor's proposal. And then the compensation adjustment there, you'll see the Senate level, which is $128,000 more than governor. The Science Museum, the governor had $250,000 per year increase in the Science Museum. The Senate has upped that to $500,000 per year. The LCCMR bill, again, I'm just for tracking purpose showing that here, but that's really not part of this bill, but it did go through the division, and I think the bill is still in committee here. Public Utilities Commission, these are mostly just additional staffing increases that they either requested or will need based on some other proposals. These were all governor's changes, except for on line 184, they requested another basic, almost not quite a full, a half-time person to help administer the changes that are in Senate File 997, and we're carrying that cost here. And then the additional compensation adjustment. And the way it works with Public Utilities Commission is they are able to assess back all these additional costs. So when we get to revenues, you'll see that we net out that increase of $2.478 million in revenues that they are able to assess back and return to the...
Mr. Chairman, from whom do they assess?
Utilities. Mr. Chairman, Senator Pariseau, they assess all their costs back to utilities, the cost of running the Public Utilities Commission.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Just a question on the complement in the DNR, and then also you mentioned for the public utilities. We used to figure kind of a general figure for one full-time employee. Do we have that figure? Just kind of, I think they averaged it before, and I don't know if you...
Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, I guess in a lot of the fiscal notes I've seen, and I don't know if it's the same for every agency, I suppose it depends on how much equipment and everything. You know, like a DNR person may need more access to equipment and vehicles and things, but a number I see a lot is usually around 90.
Okay.
But it depends on what level of person, you know,
and we were
specialist.
When we were just funding some new conservation officers, it was more like it was a little over 100,000 because of that. They need trucks and other equipment, so that does, in some cases, they do have more higher costs.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the last agency we have here is Commerce. It's on page 4. The change items here are the governor had $12 million in one-time money for E85 pump grants, and then we're carrying an item in our one-time bill of $500,000 for that, which is less than the governor, significantly. The compensation adjustment, again, is above the governor's level. Senator Metzen had a bill that comes that for $60,000 from the Telecommunication Access Minnesota Fund, I believe is the term. The Legislative Electrical Energy Task Force extension. This $20,000 per year, I'm still working on with finance about whether we actually got to carry a cost for that or not. In talking to the House, this is a number they're carrying now, and I have had an official fiscal note request into finance for this, but we're also carrying a revenue that offsets with this basically they're able to collect some costs to help administer this task force, and that's the number I'm working with right now. And it's a it'd be a statutory number. So that number may change. The demand and efficiency program, again, this is the Senator Dibble bill that still is in this committee yet, but we're carrying a cost here for that just for tracking purposes. It's there's a revenue and a statutory appropriation that happens in Senate File 997, and I'm just carrying it here to make sure that we're covering that cost at least somewhere. The governor had a number of initiatives out of the Renewable Development Fund. The first three, the Senate is going along with the governor on methane digesters, $500,000 per year, solar rebate program, $500,000 per year, and the CERTS program for $500,000 per year. The governor had $1 million per year for the hybrid electric vehicle program, and that is not in this bill. And the governor also had $5 million per year that would go to the Department of Commerce and let them issue renewable energy grants. And we're not doing that in this proposal. Some different RDF proposals under this bill would be $1 million for the renewable hydrogen initiative, $1 million for the rural wind energy revolving loan, and then $4 million per year that would go to the University of Minnesota Institute for Renewable Energy and Education, and Environment and Education. And then there's a one-time cost of using RDF funds of $475,000 per year for a carbon sequestration study. And that then is, so there's total change items in this out of both Article 1 and Article 2 of about $92 million.
Mr. Chairman.
Makes sense to go through.
Senator Stumpf.
Maybe as you go through the language a little bit later, if you could expand on line 207, and I believe there's a number of organizations that are involved, both the actual basic research and also kind of the applied the applied practical end of the research, and so I'd be interested in knowing more about that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, this is the University of Minnesota Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment that's been funded by the legislature for the last 5 years at this level for $4 million a year for research. And Senator Kelly started this 5 years ago, and we're continuing that amount on. I think you mentioned to me a question from AURI, whether they could be receiving some research assistance under this bill. And I think I've been trying to get to the bottom of that issue and talk to Senator Vickerman today about it, because I think the reason that they're asking now is that the Commerce Department in the governor's bill proposed taking a chunk of money from the Renewable Development Fund, $10 million, and putting it into the Department of Commerce to have them grant out the money to different entities. And we did not accept that initiative. And the description of it was rather broad, and it said that they would take this money that the Renewable Development, right now there's a board, the Renewable Development Fund is money that comes from Xcel, and it's administered by a board that consists of Xcel and environmentalists, and they grant out the money, and they've done some really phenomenal work with this to promote renewable energy. And I thought that was a good way to do it, and there's no reason to add another layer of bureaucracy to it. And so what Commerce was proposing, though, was a little different in the sense that they had said the money could go to the U, it could go to AURI, or it could go to some other places, but they didn't have an allocation. And so I have a feeling that that's where this came from, that AURI was hoping that maybe they could get some of that money. But traditionally, they've been funded in Senator Vickerman's in the ag budget. And so I guess there's been, and the IREE has been funded in this commerce budget for the last 5 years at this level. So I was really just continuing the status quo on that. So Senator Stumpf, I've talked with Teresa Spaeth from AURI several times in the last few weeks about the fact that they are branching out into kind of the wind and electricity side, but they've traditionally done more of the ethanol and biofuels side of things, and so they've fallen more under the ag department, and so I haven't really, they didn't bring a proposal to our committee for funding specifically. So maybe we can continue to talk about it and see if there's some research that they're doing that we could try to support. I'm not sure. And, Mr. Chair, I thought probably logically it would make sense for us to talk about our one-time proposals next because they're so closely interwoven with our ongoing target.
And Senator Anderson, just so people here are not confused, we're going to take your proposal, your one-time proposal, incorporate them into the one-time bill as you're laying them out within the low target that was established for your division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the target for ongoing money was $20 million, and that's what Mr. Mueller just went through. The one-time target that we had when we passed the bill out of division was we had a separate target for clean water legacy because we consider that so important. And when it left the division, that was for $70 million for clean water and $11 million for other one-time items, which we used for renewable energy, forestry, and other one-time items. Unfortunately, that one-time target was reduced by $19 million since we left this bill left the division. And so members of the division will see that there's been a lot of cuts since they last saw this bill in this one-time target, unfortunately. And so what we did was we reduced the clean water legacy appropriation from the $70 million over the biennium to $54.05 million over the biennium, although what we propose doing in this one-time bill, in Senator Cohen's one-time bill, is to put that, make that available in the first year of the biennium and to be spent at any time, to be used until it's used up, basically during the biennium. And we've also, in the clean water money, we've focused primarily on getting all the assessments done and the TMDLs done, and then loading as much money as we could into making sure that those are proceeding in a fast way, and then some money for restoration and cleanup of waters as well as imminent threats, septic systems that are in imminent danger to releasing sewage right into the waters. So we also incorporated the Senator Vickerman's clean water activities into our bill. So that was moved from his division into this side. So we're told by the advocates that the need is by the whole G16, by a broad array of groups that are interested in this, that the need is somewhere from $80 to $100 million a year. So it is disappointing, but it's higher than the governor's recommendation for clean water, which was about $20 million a year. So instead of $40 million for the biennium, we have $54.05 million for the biennium. And then if you look at the other page of the one-time spreadsheet, you can see the changes from when the bill left the division. Do you want to maybe just go through those?
Sure.
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, the Green Fleet's proposal is a partial funding of one of the governor's initiatives. The governor had this coming out of the environmental fund, and this would focus on retrofitting school buses and their emission systems. The governor actually had about $700,000 per year for this. We're at $290,000. The plasma torch study under Senator Saxhog, this is a feasibility study that they requested to continue this project. The next two are under natural resources are both partial funding of some governor's initiatives. The ethanol water supply, the governor had about $1.7 million actually money for this to help them address and speed up some of the permitting under for ethanol, new ethanol producing facilities and other mining and other facilities. The land records management system, this was the governor had some money in here for the governor. Actually, originally had about $1.5 million of land for helping them upgrade their technology on their lands record system. This kind of gives them the first year amount. The two studies under the Forest Resource Councils were in the governor's bill and a Senator Saxhawk proposal. The governor's proposing some one-time or some money. I think the governor's budget had this actually as ongoing, but some money that would help them. They have a new program that they need to market about limiting the types of firewood that you bring into public lands. And so they're looking for some money to get that marketing program started. Prairie Wetlands Initiative, the governor had some ongoing money for this. They will do 500 one time. The Red River Mediation Agreement, coming out of division, we had $200,000 for this program. There is some money in the base for this. This was money added to the base that we were not able to do. Senator Skoy had a proposal to help fund some fencing up in the bovine tuberculosis area of the state that's dealing with that issue up there. The proposal for the planning inventory of Dakota County, we were able to do a division, but not here. The International Wolf Center for $350, the Shade Tree Replacement for $100, and the Silviculture Research Center, that's a half or 1 year funding of a 2 year proposal. Under Board of Water and Soil Resources, Senator Kubley had Senate File 480 that was partially funded in the Ag Bill, and then this is a pretty scaled-back version of what was proposed to be funded out of this funding division, and this will be done here with one-time money. This is basically to help some of those initiatives to start up some of the crops and the permitting process for dealing with new crops that would be turned into ethanol. So there's a $500,000 and a $200,000 appropriation under Bowser for that. The governor had a grant program under Bowser for wetland conservation. We're not doing. Some of the drainage work group recommendations to establish guidelines for $150,000 one time was the governor's initiative. The next one is another grant program that we saw a division, we were able to put some money into it, but it's zero now. And then one more item of devising a plan under the Wetland Conservation Act for $60,000. The Lake Titlow Watershed proposal we funded out of division, but after looking, this was included in Senator Langseth's bonding proposal today. The $92,000 per year for the Minnesota River Basin Joint Powers Board, Senator Frederickson proposal, and then a small amount for the Blue Earth Board of Water and Soil Resources of $2,000 for a request that they had. Under Commerce, here's the E85 pump grants. Again, the governor had $12 million for this. This continues the level that was previously appropriated in the previous biennium through the Department of Ag that used to come out of the ethanol payments for this. The hybrid electric vehicle, the governor actually had this coming out of the RDF fund, and then $2 million per year for rural wind energy, and then $500,000 one-time money for heating assistant grants. And so that gets us to $8 million, and originally out of division we were at $11 million from funding out of this list.
So, Mr. Chair, we cut $3 million from this part and $16 million from the clean water target. So that's where we're at. And then we'll have Mr. Knopf go through the language of the bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll try to go through it quickly. And I won't mention anything about base riders unless there's a change in the rider. Generally, a lot of these riders, this Article 1 contains a number of riders every 2 years, but I will point out where there are differences in the riders. You can see the first two sections are the boilerplate language. If you look in Section 3, we're in the Pollution Control Agency. All the riders on page 3 are base riders. If you look at on page 4, you've got a new sentence inserted in a base rider. It's for the feedlot grants to counties. There's a new use of the money on line 4.10. The commissioner, in consultation with the Minnesota Association of County Feedlot Officers, may use up to 5% for initiatives to enhance existing delegated programs. So that's new from previous years. You also then on 4.20, you've got the rider. The governor also allocated money for the regulatory services for ethanol mining and other developing sectors. Although this, as Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier, the Senate takes it from the Environmental Fund. There's also on 4.24 to 4.26 a priority for bioenergy crop utilization technologies. That's related to a bill of Senator Kubley, Senate File 480. And then there also on 4.28 was added by the division a report kind of recommendations on basically how to pay for this out of the Environmental Fund, water and air fees that would result in the money for that amount. The top of page 5 is a base rider. And then there are a number of base riders under air. If you get down, though, to on the bottom of page 5 on 5.27, you'll see a comparable rider under the water program, under the air program, with money from the Environmental Fund for the air quality part of this. Again, the same priorities. And then there's an additional thing on 5.33, Senator Kubley's request, the $300,000 is first year is a fully characterized emissions expected from biomass gasification facilities. And then on the land provisions, you'll see that there's the standard Superfund one, the first rider there, and then a number of riders that have been carried for years here. On 6.34, though, you'll see a new rider, and that's related to Senate File 1047, Senator Sieben. It deals with $500,000 each year for environmental health tracking. And of that amount, $400,000 per year is for transfer to the Department of Health. And then in multimedia, you've got the same rider dealing with the ethanol mining and other economic sectors for the portions that are handled by multimedia. And again, you have the same language that you saw earlier. For environmental assistance, all the riders in the bottom of page 7 are all the same, are all from same as similar years or previous years, including, but the amounts of Mr. Mueller mentioned have increased in some of those. Administrative support, that's the same rider that was carried 2 years ago on the transfer of money from the Environmental Fund to the Remediation Fund. Now we get into the Department of Natural Resources, and again, boilerplate on the bottom of page 8. The first two riders in the top of page 9 are base riders. What you'll see, though, on 9.20 is you see the money from the minerals management account that Mr. Mueller mentioned. This is only 1 year, and then this account, basically, you'll see later there's also a repeal of the account because in the second year this will be handled by the general fund as it had previous to 2 years ago. Base rider on the schools on the suspense account on the bottom of page 9. On page 10, you'll see the rider on the land records management system on 10.6. Mr. Mueller went through the financing of that before. Also on 10.14, you see the rider for the land asset management. So Mr. Mueller went through the financing of that part. You'll see on page 10, you have the base riders for Red River Mediation, for the Mississippi Headwaters Board and Leech Lake Band for their portion of the Mississippi Headwaters Board costs. And then on the top of page 11, you'll see that the ring dike provision on the $125,000 per year, except on 11.5, it did change that in division so that either money for either year can be carried forward or backward depending on where the needs are for the ring dike. So they could spend it all in the first year if they had requests for that amount. Forest management, you'll see the base riders. You've got the open appropriation for the firefighting expenses is the first rider under forest management. There's some direct appropriation, but then it allows for that opened for their costs for fighting fires. And then on page 12, you'll see the rider that begins on 12.4. This is Mr. Mueller kind of went through the forest management investment account, the new appropriations from that, and this includes, if you look at the itemized numbers on 12.11 through 12.21, you can see what the money will be spent on. Those are basically the new activities. And then on 12.25, this has been a base rider, but it's a continuation because this act, the Sustainable Forest Resources Act, is set to sunset on July 1st of this year. But in the bill later on, you'll see that that's extended, and then this money, which is comparable to what's been funded under that, is also included here. You have the base rider on the bottom of page 12. Again, base rider on the top of page page 13, and then you get the new general fund provision that Mr. Mueller went over, the $1.5 million per year for additional technical and cost share assistance to non-industrial private forest landowners, and the $500,000 a year to address escalating land asset management demands, just boundary disputes. And these were from the governor's budget, and Mr. Mueller went through the financing earlier. Bottom of page 13 on parks and recreation management, those are the first one is a base rider. The second one is for the additional interpretive services. That was in the governor's budget. And then on the bottom, that's the lottery and lieu money for state parks and recreation areas. That's a base rider. And then on 4.6, that's, Mr. Mueller also went through that earlier. That's the additional money from the Natural Resources Fund for increased park maintenance work. Subdivision 6 is trails and waterways management. You see the base rider for the snowmobile trails, grant and aid trails, and then you've got the base rider for the off-highway vehicle grants and aid trails. And then you have the money from the water recreation account for Lake Superior. That's base rider. Another base rider on the trail operation from Lottery and Lou. 1512, that's a base rider, 1521. On 1526, we've got the increase that was in Senator Kubley's bill for the this is from the governor's proposal. This is a non-motorized trails within state forests. That was the governor's proposal on 1526. On 1529, that's the additional money for the Wild and Scenic Rivers program that was in the governor's budget. And then on 15.31, Senator Dill and Senate File 115 and Senator Frederickson and Senate File 366, that's the additional money for a couple of new, and you'll see that later on in the language, a couple of new canoe and boating routes. That's from the Natural Resources Fund, Water Recreation Account. Fish and Wildlife, another, there are a lot of riders in here. I won't go over the specific ones on basically all the riders under Fish and Wildlife. And page 16 are base riders. Page 17, those are all base riders from those specific accounts, the specific habitat accounts. And then if you look on page 18, the first couple riders are also base riders. But the if you start on 18.16, you see the roadsides for wildlife program. Again, the governor was at $100,000. This is $150,000. Senator Chaudhry, the bill, Senate File 1256. You see on page, or on 18.19, you have the rider for the Let's Go Fishing program. That was Senate File 1029, Senator Saxog. And that's coming from the lottery and lieu money to the Game and Fish Fund. On 18.27, that's the from Senate File 135, Senator Scoy. It deals with bovine tuberculosis surveillance and diagnosis in wild deer. 18.33, that's the money for the Budgetary Oversight Committee. That was in the governor's recommendation. On top of page 19 is a rider that's not tied specifically to the money, but it's basically asking a report because of the imbalances between in the Game and Fish Fund, between the money that's going for fisheries and the money that's going for wildlife doesn't match up with the money that's being raised by the license fees in those two categories. So this is requesting a report and recommendations on how to deal with those imbalances. And then the last rider is a standard rider that's been in the base. And then we get into ecological services. Again, the first two riders are base riders for non-game wildlife and other areas. And then on 20.23, you have the this was a recommendation of the governor's that dealt with the invasive species management. Mr. Mueller kind of went through the financing before, but this is the rider. You can see that they're appropriate, how much they're appropriated, but then of that amount, some of it comes from the Natural Resources Fund, and you'll see there are some new fees and some changes in fees later on that provide the money for that. And there's also some fees that were going into other accounts that are being transferred to this new account. Then you see the Project Wild language in the bottom of page 20. That Mr. Mueller went through the financing on that. And then on page 21 and 21.5, that's the money that goes to the Ecological Services for all-terrain vehicle trails. That was in Senator Chaudhry's bill, Senate File 1538. Now we're into enforcement in Subdivision 9. Number of riders are base riders. Basically, everything on the rest of page 21 are all base riders in enforcement. Same thing with most of page 22. What you see is on the bottom of page 22. 22.34 is the rider. It's based on Senator Chaudhry's Senate File 1538. This is the new money from the all-terrain vehicle fee increases that we'll see later in the bill. And then you'll see that there's also includes money for the for qualifying off-highway vehicle organizations to assist in safety and environmental education. That's on the top of page 23. You'll see the language for the program later in the bill. Operations support, that's a base rider for the money for out of the lottery in lieu for Como and Duluth Zoo. The Minnesota Conservation Corps, that's just a base rider on 23.31, deals with the natural resource fund components, requiring an agreement with the Commissioner of Natural Resources before that money is expended. And then we get into on page 24, get into the Board of Water and Soil Resources. You can see the base riders on the basically all the riders on page 24 are base riders that have been carried for Bowser for a number of years. Same with the top of page 25, including, as Mr. Mueller mentioned, the money for the Red River Basin Commission on 25.4. On 25.13, that's a base rider, but, of course, it includes the additional money from Senate File 399, Senator Vickerman, for the Area 2. On 25.21, that's the additional money for the Wetlands Conservation Act for oversight. It contained in Senator Chaudhry. Had a couple of bills, Senate File 1704 and 1137, related to that, and also the money for managing the bank, for enforcing wetland replacement and bank sites. That's also, it was in Senator Chaudhry's two bills. On 25.29, that's the provision Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier for the drainage, and it's to provide assistance to local drainage management officials and to update the Minnesota Public Drainage Manual. That was in Senate File 642, Senator Sparks, also in the governor's budget. The rider in the bottom of page 25.33, that's to begin the process to address the auditor's report. It's kind of there was a bill in Senator Anderson, Senate File 1782, that was going to require emergency rulemaking and other things, but this is to kind of begin that process to address some of the concerns raised by the auditor, and will require a report back before next year with those performance and operational standards and other information, including any draft rule changes that the board is going to be requesting to make to implement those. And then again, the rider in the bottom of 2620 is a standard base rider that we have for the grant programs for the board. The Minnesota Zoological Board, that's just a base rider on the lottery and lieu money. Science Museum, no rider there. Met Council, those are the base riders. Of course, the dollar amounts will change based on the spreadsheet, as Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier. The compensation increases, that's basically a new provision for all divisions this year in the 3.25%. And then, Mr. Chairman, I can go into the statutory language changes that are part of the bill. And the first one, Section 11, is...
Go right ahead, Mr. Knopf.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. The first one, Section 11, this is part of a kind of a refinancing of how the department handles some of their... What they're basically creating a new account, and so we'll see that there's a new account created. So under the professional support services support account, this money is now going to be put in a new account that's created in this bill. So we've got several places, and these were from Senate File 438, Senator Saxhog. So that's Section 11 and 12 relate to that. Section 13 was from Senate File 1250, Senator Skogan. This is a request from the department to allow, under the expedited rules provision, this is to kind of clarify their authority and the ability to use that expedited authority for those rules for zones and permit areas and boundaries and designated fish spawning beds. Again, that did go through policy and through the state and local government committee. Section 14 is again from Senator Saxhog, Senate File 438. That's that forest resource assessment products provision again, and you'll see the same on page 29, Section 15. We'll see that account created a little bit later on. It's in Chapter 89, so it shows up later. Section 16 is the off-highway vehicle damage account. This extends the application of the account, basically removes the sunset date, but it also clarifies that it applies to illegal operation of off-highway vehicles. And that's from Senate File 476, Senator Saxhog. Section 17, this, as I mentioned earlier, the new program being created. This was from Senator Chaudhry's Senate File 1538, and it creates a program that allows the department to work with organizations for volunteer services to promote the safe and responsible operation of off-highway vehicles. And this is the way the there were some amendments, kind of technical amendments in committee, but the way it came to us from the policy committee. Section 18, which begins on the bottom of page 30, deals with excluding snowmobiles that are 25 years or older from the requirement to obtain registration for the snowmobile. So if they're the older snowmobiles, that was a division amendment. ATVs. Excuse me. Yeah, that is ATVs. Excuse me.
Do we have ATVs that are 25 years old?
That's what I ask. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Mr. Chairman, according to Senator Bach, there are.
Does it include snowmobiles?
Mr. Chairman, snowmobiles have their own exemption for those that are 25 years or older, collector snowmobiles. They are limited in what they can be used on, but there is something in existing law on snowmobiles that are 25 years or older.
I'd like to see an ATV that was a 1982 model.
But, Mr. Chairman, it's likely to have only three wheels. And, Mr. Chairman, we'll go on, and then the registration fee for ATVs is in Section 19. That was the increase Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier, going from $30 to $45 every 3 years for the registration. Section 20, those are the purposes of the ATV account. Senator Chaudhry had another bill, Senate File 1210, and this would allow the use of the ATV account for minimum maintenance forest roads, and then also on county forest roads that are part of a designated trail system within the state forest boundaries. Section 21 deals with infested waters. That was, again, from Senate File 1250, Senator Scogin. And this would allow the designation of infested waters without going through a rule process under current law. And you'll see the next few sections deal with that expedited process. Instead of going through the expedited process, it allows the commissioner by written order and publish in the state register. This was in Senate File 1250, Senator Scogin, and did go through the appropriate committees before getting to the Finance Committee. Section 22 and 23 are related to that. You can see it's striking infested waters, the designation of infested waters, since we're going to be going through this different process now. Section 24, and this is this places the civil penalties in the newly created invasive species account rather than the water recreation account, because previous to this, the money coming from fees was coming out, was the money was placed in the water recreation account and then appropriated out of that account. Now it's going to be going into this newly created account. We'll see in the next section. Section 25, that's the creation of this new account. You can see that that the surcharges on watercraft licenses will be deposited in the account, and then also the Commissioner of Finance is going to transfer money from the annual surcharge on non-resident hunting licenses and non-resident fishing licenses into this account, and then it spells out the use of money in the account for control of invasive species. Section 26, as I mentioned earlier in the appropriation, those are the new rivers or new segments of rivers being added to the list of rivers with the boating and canoe routes from Senate File 115, Senator Dill, and Senate File 366, Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Knopf, do you know, in Section 26, the rivers that are designated there, are all of them except the new ones marked, or don't we know that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and this allows the commissioner to mark them. I know in past years there have been a few of these rivers that have been placed on this list, and there hasn't been an appropriation of money to put the markings on. So I'm not sure if the department has gone and if they've had enough money to do that. What this does, though, this is the same thing that the Senate did or the legislature did last year when they added two rivers to it, also appropriated the money to make sure they can get the signs up. But they're also allowed to work with local groups in putting the signs up. So if they don't have the money to do it, but you can see that the bill carries $120,000 for these rivers. There should be markings on them. I mean, this just authorizes the commissioner to work with local units of government. Again, as I think in the policy committee, when this came up, Senator Fredericks and Senator Dill had their bills up, there was a discussion about whether they had to have the money. And I think to be sure that to get your signs up, you'd want to have some money appropriated for that purpose. And that's what this bill does.
Senator Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you look at the existing language there, it says at the end of the list of rivers, Crow Rivers. And I would assume when it says Crow Rivers, all of the Crow Rivers would have been part of the designated canoe routes. But in fact, only the North Fork of the Crow, which goes through my farm, is really maintained as a canoe route. And the South Fork that goes through Hutchinson and Watertown and so forth, that was never maintained as a canoe route. So I think the answer to your question is that if they're on the list here, it doesn't mean they're necessarily designated or not necessarily marked, because the South Fork of the Crow River has never been marked, even though it's part of the Crow River.
Okay, maybe that's an area that we can kind of get some information on which ones are marked.
Yeah, because Mr. Chairman, you can see on 3.25 it says when feasible. So it's when they have the money and it's feasible.
Well, I mean, if you're an avid canoer and you looked at this and you'd want to go on the Kettle River, it doesn't really tell you if it's marked or not. So
hopefully, Mr. Chair, I don't know if there's some canoe guide somewhere around the state that or the DNR maybe publishes some information about this. I wouldn't think they'd look at the statute book, but is there something else?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, they do publish maps of these canoe routes, and they do have lists of the canoe routes with maps and the ones that are marked.
Okay.
Mr. Kennard.
Mr. Chairman, and then now we get into on page 34, we get into some changes in the surcharges on watercraft. What this does, and you'll see a number of changes, you see $5, $15, and $10 surcharges. Only the ones marked with 10 and 15 are being increased. Under current law, you'll see a section that's actually on page 35. It's section 32. You have a $5 surcharge that was placed on all the watercraft. And what this does is it places a variable surcharge depending on the type of watercraft and the length of watercraft. And you can see on basically, the way this works, if it's 17 feet or longer, it's going to have a $15 surcharge. If it's a personal watercraft, it's a $15 surcharge. If it's between 16 and 17, it's a $10 surcharge. And all the other, and basically everything else is kind of maintained at its current level of $5. So you'll get a variation in fees. And that's to pay for, again, the invasive species program. And this was a recommendation of the governor. In the governor's budget, that provides revenue toward that invasive species account.
Mr. Chair, members,
Senator Anderson,
if they've heard about this increased boat fee, we certainly had a lot of discussion about this in our division, and the governor's recommendation started with a fee on trailers as well that we ended up not doing, or that was withdrawn, and so that was something we didn't act on, and we tried to find some other revenue sources to fight off invasive species, and that's where we ended up with at least increasing the hunting and fishing licenses for non-residents to help at least supplement the dollar so it wouldn't all fall on the boat owners.
Senator Anderson, was the thinking that it would be temporary? Is that the surcharge idea, or
just went through the bill?
That would be a nice hope, Mr. Chair, if we're able to. It certainly, since it's called a surcharge, you could characterize it that way, but I guess we don't have a decision on that one way or the other. We carry it into the future, but that all depends on our budget in the future.
Chairman, then the section, as I mentioned earlier on section 32, that's deleting the $5 here, and then basically it's whatever the surcharge is for each of those watercraft. Section 33, that's a technical change related to this new invasive species account. Instead of going to the water rec account, it'll go in the invasive species account. Section 34, as I mentioned earlier, this is from Senate File 438 from Senator Saxog. That's where the language on those four sections earlier in the bill, that the receipts now will be put in this forest resource assessments and products and services account rather than those accounts. And you'll see there is a statutory appropriation, but all of the accounts that this money is being transferred from had statutory appropriations. And so it allows the DNR to basically manage the use of their forest resource assessment products and services better. It was a recommendation to the administration.
Just to go back to that surcharge, do we have the ability to put a surcharge on ships that come in the Great Lakes? And if so, what do they get assessed?
Go ahead, Mr. Kennard.
Mr. Chairman, we really don't. If there are some federal rules on this. I did get an email from, I think from Bob Meyer, transferred from somebody else in the department, that went over this. I know in some of these international waters, we were not able to even require a registration with the state.
Mr.
Can we assess a docking fee?
That's a good question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the legislature talked about that, I think, four or five years ago.
Senator Dibble had a bill this year that would have done something to those ships besides requiring them to do something about their ballast water. I think that was one of the pieces that has been discussed among a lot of Great Lakes states. But I thought he had something that would have required them somehow to be assessed but it didn't go anywhere. It was rather controversial. I can't remember how he did it, but it would be nice to get because that is certainly one of the biggest contributors to the problem.
And that's what I was thinking, too, is that we know where the problem has come from, and yet we can't really get any help they should help contribute to some of the solutions of controlling it.
Mr. Chair, I think I'll certainly talk to Senator Dibble about that, because I know he's worked on this issue quite a bit, and maybe he can talk about that tomorrow when we present the bill on the floor talk about some of the other possible approaches he's explored and what the other choices might be, if there are any.
And, Mr. Chairman, as far as the registration of the watercraft, one of the issues is we're required under federal law to recognize another state's registration, so we can't charge them an additional registration fee. As long as the watercraft is in the state for 60 days or less, we're required to acknowledge that and not charge them additional money. And so the question is, and I think it came up with Senator Parisot's bill a number of years ago, we looked at charging an access fee for using water access sites, and there was a concern, and I don't know if we ever got a final answer on it, that might be in violation of that provision of federal law. Mr. Chairman, Section 35, this deals with the Sustainable Forest Resources Act. That's the extension, the 10-year extension of that act. I mentioned that earlier in the funding. That was from Senate File 438, Senator Saxhog. Section 36, this is the Minerals Coordinating Committee. It extends it for another 4 years. That was in Senate File 1250. Senator Scogin, again, went through a Senate Rest Committee. And then Section 37, this is dealing with allowing the commissioner to establish fees for special events on WMAs and AMAs, or aquatic management areas, and wildlife management areas. That was from Senate File 1250, also Senator Scogin. Section 38, this deals with the Game and Fish Annual Reports. That's the deer license donation. We'll see language on that later. And this was from Senate File 399, Senator Erickson Ropes. Again, it started out as a bill requiring a dollar fee on deer licenses, and now it's become a donation program after it came through division. Actually, I guess that was in the policy committee where that was changed. And then in Section 39, you'll see the deer license donation program. This is basically, well, you'll see that later on the license fee, but it's deposited in a special revenue account. It's appropriated to the commissioner for deer management, including assisting with the cost of processing the deer. And then the money's appropriated to that. And they can also do it for food handlers, but it has to be, the deer has to be donated to a charitable organization registered under Chapter 309. This was, again, from Senator Erickson Rope, Senate File 399. Section 40 deals with personal possession. What this does is, if you look at the language is on 38, where it basically removes the requirement that you have the pictorial pheasant or migratory waterfowl stamp. So now you won't have to have that as long as you've got the acknowledge on the license that you've paid for those stamps. You don't have to have the pictorial stamp. In fact, if you want the pictorial stamp, you're going to have to pay $2 to have it mailed to you. You can see that on line 38.12. On 38.13, this was a division amendment for a three-year fish house or dark house license. And what this does is it just makes sure that license period, because most of our licenses are for 1 year, this would say that it's good for the 3 years, for the year it's purchased, and for the two succeeding years if you buy that three-year license. Section 42, this is for non-residents under age 16. This was from Senate File 1250, Senator Scogin. It allows those non-residents under age 18 to purchase the small game license at the resident rate, which is $6. And then Section 43, this is again from Senate File 1250, Senator Scogin. It would allow spouses of residents that are on active military duty to buy a resident license regardless of whether they're a resident or not. Section 44, is from Senate File 781, Senator Jen Olson, and this deals with residents discharged from active service. It does two things. In paragraph A, it allows them to take small game and fish without a license as long as they possess their discharge papers, and they can do this for the 24 months after their discharge. In paragraph B, it allows them to get one free deer license within the 24 months after discharge from active duty, and that's, again, it's limited to one deer license. Section 45 deals with the lifetime licenses. It's from Senator Paraso, Senate File 150. It adds trapping to the activities that can be conducted under that lifetime license. Section 46 does the same thing with the sporting license, again from Senate File 1250, Senator Paraso. And you can see the effective date is August 21st, but it would go back and apply to those people who already purchased their lifetime licenses, which they were began to be sold on March 1st, 2001. On Section 47, here you've got a number of changes that are come from different places, actually. You've got that on 40.27 to 40.29, Senator Scogin, Senate File 1250. That was that's, again, for those non-residents. You'll see later on they're going to reduce the rates for those non-residents under age 18. And then on 40.30 and 40.31, we're removing the variable license for the archery deer license based on the other state's fee. That was from Senate File 262, Senator Erickson Ropes. It was also in Senate File 1250. On 41.2, there's a special license for non-residents. That was also carried in Senator Erickson Ropes bill, but it was an amendment on removing the fox and coyote. Basically, what this does is says that a non-resident can take fox and coyote under a small game license if one is required. Then I think for coyote it's not, for fox it would be. But they don't have to buy this special license for non-residents. On 41.5, those are the new license fees for those people under age 18 that are non-residents to hunt deer. And then at 41, that was again also from Senator Scogin's bill. And then an amendment that was added added by the division is this $5 surcharge in 41.8. For non-resident hunting licenses. You see it's only for the first four. It wouldn't be added to the youth or this special Canada geese $4 license. It would be a $5 license, and that's, again, to be used for invasive species. On Section 48, that's the provision from Senator Erickson Ropes bill that allows a person to add a donation of $1 or more. Again, the original bill was just $1, and it was added to all licenses. This is a voluntary donation of $1 or more. Section 49, again, contains a couple of things. The paragraph A, the changes to the license fees, that was added by amendment and division. That's a $2 increase to the non-resident fishing license fees, and that was to cover the cost of eliminating the requirement for, and I think you'll see an amendment on that later, too, eliminating the requirement that portable fish houses are licensed. On 41.32, that was the governor's recommendation of a $2 surcharge on non-resident fishing licenses, and that's, again, for invasive species. On Section 50, you'll see Section 50 and 51, that's was an amendment of Senator Chaudhry's in division that would allow it a three-year license for fish houses, and again, it's just three times the normal, the annual license fee, so somebody could buy one for 3 years for their fish house. Section 52, this corresponds with the fee change and eliminating fox and coyote from that special non-resident license. Section 53, that deals with the pictorial pheasant stamp possession consistent with the earlier change. That was from Senate File 1250, Senator Scogin. Section 54 is a comparable change for the migratory waterfowl stamp that was again in that bill dealing with requiring the actual pictorial stamp in possession. Section 55, That was in Senator Scogin's bill, Senate File 1250. It's also a recommendation of the governor to basically have the commissioner charge fees for fishing contests to recover the costs of issuing the permit and monitoring the activities. Section 56, this was again paired with the increase in non-resident fishing license fees. If you look on 43.27, this would say that as long as you take your fish house off the ice at night, or at least don't leave it unattended during the night. You know, if you could fish through the night, but if it's unattended at all at any time during the night, that you do not have to have a license for your fish house. This is, again, added by amendment in division. Section 57, this is the Reinvest in Minnesota Clean Energy Program from Senator Kubley, Senate File 480. This, there's money in a one-time bill to begin the process for this. There's no money to begin this. The money for this is envisioned similar to the other RIM programs with the use of bonding. But this is from Senate File 480. Senator Kubley's run that through a number of committees and picks up the language for that. It's an easement program similar to the RIM easements under Bowser, but the property rights acquired are a little bit different because this is for growing energy crops. Thank you. And you can see on page 45.20, the payments for the easements, it's telling the board to develop this tiered payment system for the, and they've done that under the RIM program too, but it'll have to be done through a process. The important thing is on page 46, you've got a technical committee on subdivision 11 that the board will be working with in developing that payment structure and how this program will work. I think the idea, as I understand it, is that there's some money in the one-time bill to begin this process, and then next year to be eligible for bonding and next year's bonding bill to start acquiring the easements. Section 58, this was a bill of Senator Pappas dealing with PBDEs. I won't say the name that's listed there. And what it was kind of modified. There was a number of other provisions. This includes the study portion of it with Commissioner of PCA and Health and Safety getting back by January 15, 2008 with a report on PBDEs and their alternatives. We also include the Commissioner's Health and Public Safety. And then there's also the ability to participate in a clearinghouse in Subdivision 2, an interstate clearinghouse. And then Subdivision 3 deals with procurement provisions related to the Commissioner of Administration for equipment supplies containing PBDEs. Section 59, that's continuous trail designation, that just extends with recommendation of the governor. They don't have the trail apparently ready yet. It said that they had to have it ready for use by April 1, 2007 for this continuous trail. And they're recommending that to give them until June 30th, 2009. Section 60 deals with the voluntary termination of timber sale permits. This was from Senate File 260, Senator Saxog. And it deals with certain permits under a window. You'll see the important language, I think, is on page 48.4, where it says that if the permit was issued between July 1, 2004 and January 1, 2004, it contains predominantly aspen timber species, and the aspen was sold for $50 per cord or more. And that allows the commissioner to cancel those permits, but then the commissioner retains the 15% down payment on the permit, and the permit can be applied, or that $15 down payment can be applied against new timber permits that are purchased by the permittee. And that's a one-time dealing with some of the issues on forest prices in recent years, especially the price of aspen. The repealer is the minerals management account, and as we saw earlier, there's only one more year. So on July 1st of 2008, that account is not needed anymore. So it's repeal on that date because the money for minerals management will be coming out of the general fund. And that's the end of Article 1. I think Mr. Mueller is going to go through Article 2.
Mr. Chairman, quickly through Article 2, which is the energy appropriations. This covers the appropriations for the department, just a portion of Department of Commerce that is in this budget division and the Public Utilities Commission. Section 1 is the boilerplate language showing the totals for the article, which is $18.77 million of general fund and a small amount from the $60,000 from the Telecommunication Access Minnesota Fund. Section 2, again, is boilerplate language. Section 3 is the Department of Commerce. Now, again, this division or this bill only funds the energy and telecommunications portions of the Department of Commerce. The other portions of the Department of Commerce is funded in the Jobs and Economic Development Funding Division. Under 49.19 is a proposal from Senator Metzen, which would fund $60,000 in the first year for the Minnesota Commission on Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People. This would become an ongoing appropriation. 49.29 is some language added in division, asking the Electrical Energy Task Force to study some environmental friendly manufacturing and assembly processes for the workers that are formerly employed at the St. Paul Ford Manufacturing Plant. Section 4 is within the Department of Commerce, and this is where they transfer money from the Renewable Development Fund into the Department of Commerce, and then they would be issued as grants. Basically, the Renewable Development Fund is sort of a fund that's outside the state accounting system. So this basically uses some language that has been used in the past that would transfer the money to the Department of Commerce into the way I'm tracking is under a special revenue account, and then appropriates it out as grants for the following. Under Section 4, lines 50.5 is the and lines 50.4 and 50.5 is the total amount that transfer in under Section 4. It's basically $3.975 million the first year and $1.5 million the second year. Now, these grants would go for on lines 50.13, $500,000 per year for farm biogas or methane digesters. This would go to the Department of Ag and to the PCA. $500,000 for solar rebates per year, $500,000 for the continued funding of the Community Energy and Technical Assistance Program, or CERTS. Those first three items were all in the governor's proposals. Number four there on 50.24 is from Senator Putner Solon's bill to do a one-time study for carbon sequestration activities. I always have a problem saying that. Number five is Senator Anderson proposal dealing with the hydrogen proposal, renewable hydrogen proposal, $1 million per year, or $1 million for the first year. And number six is $1 million in the first year for a rural wind energy development revolving loan program. Section five is some additional amount out of the renewable development fund, and this we talked about briefly earlier, but this is the $4 million per year that would go to IRE over at the University of Minnesota. Section six is the appropriation for Public Utilities Commission. There's no riders under there. Section seven is changing the language for the amount of money that goes into the Renewable Development Fund. This would add the Monticello to the existing language. So thus it would increase the amount, or double the amount that would go into the Renewable Development Fund once the site is using their dry cast storage. Section 8 is language establishing the Rural Wind Energy Developing Revolving Loan Fund. I won't go through all the proposals there, but basically it sets limits of the loan at $100,000 per year. States eligible projects and such. And this would be coming out of a one-time shot of money out of the Renewable Development Fund would fund this. Section 9 is some language dealing with the renewable hydrogen proposal. Section 10 is also some language with the renewable hydrogen proposal. Section 11 is asking the Department of Commerce to establish a renewable hydrogen roadmap. This was Senator Anderson's proposal. Section 12 is extending the sunset of the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force. It was set to expire June 30th, 2007. This would expand it to 2012. That was an amendment added in committee. Section 13 and 14 and 15 all deal with Senator Solon's terrestrial carbon sequestration activities and some of the terms and definitions that would be dealing with under that study. That is it.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I have four small, mostly technical amendments that I'd like to offer.
I've got a question.
Oh, there you are. Sorry, you've moved the gavel.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Just hold up for just a second, Senator. Senator Stumpf.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on Section 60, and I know there was some discussion in the Environment Committee on that, can you identify the loss, voluntary termination of timber sale permits?
Page 47.
Can you identify the loss to the school trust fund as to the dollar amount?
Well, Mr. Chair, this was a difficult provision where there was first one fiscal note, and then there was, I think, a second fiscal note or fiscal at least estimate that was quite high. The first one was like, you probably heard it in the policy committee, that was like $17 million. But by the end, what we did was, after Senator Sachshag and Senator Bach had a lot of conversation with the DNR forestry people, I think what they came up with was an understanding that it would not have a cost. Now, we're not tracking a cost, correct, in the bill. Do you want to add anything in terms of how we – did we narrow the language a little bit to help?
Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, Senator Anderson. I also want to point out a sentence on 47.33. It says, in the case of a permit relating to trust land, the commissioner shall terminate the permit for an eligible sale of timber according to this section only if the termination of the permit would secure the maximum long-term economic return for the land consistent with the fiduciary responsibilities imposed by law in regards to the trust fund. So my understanding is that sentence would require that they'd have to be able to show that the long-term interest of the trust fund would be protected for a decision made into this. They'd have to weigh, because, you know, as you know, that many of these permits were purchased where they only provided 15% of the permit up front. And as I understand, the law was, I think, just changed last year or the year before, where now we require 15% of the bid, but it was 15% of the appraised value before. So it may not be a lot of money compared with the overall permit cost. And that permit, so that they have to weigh out whether or not keeping that 15% or allowing that, and then that permit holder may be able to string it out for 5 years and not cut timber and kind of wait around, or to get it back in the mix and start them cutting now. They'll have to kind of run a model to see which way it would end up better. But the way I read that sentence, they couldn't do anything that would harm the trust fund.
Senator Stone?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Knopf, is obviously it sounds like you don't have a fiscal note as such to look at.
Mr. Miller?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, originally the language, a slightly different language, did have a fiscal note, and there was some negative impacts on some of the revenues coming into some of the funds, some of the dedicated forest funds, the school trust funds, even a little bit of the general fund. Further discussions with the department from various members of the committee and adjusting the language a little bit, and I don't want to speak for the DNR, but I think it somewhat agree that there's a lot of speculation involved in hammering out that fiscal note, and they agreed at the end to basically say we could do this without carrying a cost because there were pluses and minuses to what you would do if this didn't happen. Some may argue that there would be even a bigger negative impact if we didn't do this. So it may be one of those things where ongoing next year or the year after, we may have to look back at this and see whether it did actually have a cost or not.
Mr. Chairman, and I don't want to belabor this, but and I appreciate the creative writing on the bottom of page 47 and the top of page 48, but it would be nice to get something from the department that would actually kind of lay out what their plan or approach would be. And I don't need it now or anything, but I just to have whatever thoughts that they might have in some kind of a written form.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll work on that as we move forward on this bill. If I could deal with the amendments next, I'd appreciate that. I've got, let's see. Well, we have a technical amendment. You want to do that one first, the A7?
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, as this one's being handed out, the A7 amendment is just cleans up a couple of items that in the bill that we found. The first item, lines two and three and four on the amendment, just cleans up some language on one of the riders in the PCA, just restates the sentence to make it work. The second item is line five, and it just basically clarifies one of the riders within the DNR where we've appropriated some additional money for parks that is tied to the fees for the campsites that want to make sure that this isn't the only money the DNR is going to spend on maintenance and everything for parks, that this would hopefully be for an increase for park services. Line 6 through 9, this goes back to an amendment that was offered by Senator Bach to basically get rid of the fees for portable fish houses, and who's hoping to cover this by increasing the cost of non-resident fishing. Okay. And okay. After the amendment was adopted and further discussion with the DNR, we discovered that we probably had to increase the non-resident fishing a little bit more to help balance those costs. This may not balance it 100%, but this gets it awfully closer. So that just increases. We added $2 to all the non-resident fees in fishing fees, except for the 24-hour one in committee, and this increases some of them an additional $1.50. And the $48 one is, what's that one again?
That's the family.
The $48 one is the non-resident family one. That one would actually go up another $2.50. And the thinking here is kind of increasing proportionally to how much the base cost is for those. Lines 11 through 20 is language we need to add to Article 2 that basically, this is the compensation 3.25% language that we've been seeing in all the other budget bills here, and we forgot to add that to Article 2. Line 50 or 21 just clarifies some of the language within that section that increases the contribution to the RDF. And that is purely technical, is the suggestion from Mr. Watson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would move the A7 amendment.
Okay, we've got the A7 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? Senator Anderson moves the A7 amendment. If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Anderson.
I'm just starting amendments. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I have two amendments that are unfortunately on two of my bills, but they're primarily technical. The A3 amendment, and this is related to the Rural Wind Energy Development Revolving Loan Fund. And while it's being passed out, I can just explain it. I had two bills that are incorporated in the language here. One is for a rural wind assistance program that includes a revolving loan fund to help community wind developers get access to some low-interest financing to help them get the very expensive studies that they need to put a wind development project together. And that bill went through three committees, I guess. But Mike Bull from the Department of Commerce is over there nodding his head. He and I worked with him on this bill as well as with my hydrogen initiative bill, and he had requested some changes that we weren't able to incorporate into our omnibus bill, and so I just want to add them at this time. We've had a number of people working on the language to make sure it was all agreed to, and this represents some small changes to this revolving loan fund that Mr. Bull says are needed for his staff to be able to administer this revolving loan fund so that we have requirements for repayment of the loan if there's a problem with repayment, and also criteria for who will get the loan to make sure that you actually have established some level of having a really legitimate project before you're eligible for a loan. And so that's a summary. I could go into more detail if members would like, but the A3 amendment would incorporate those changes that the administration has asked for.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Knopf.
Senator Anderson, I've just been informed that because this recodes where this is located, we need a change to the rider on page 50. Be on Well, 50.34, instead of needing to delete 116J9861 and insert 216C.39. And then I think on 50.33, it would be good to put before Minnesota, insert the word new. That because it's a new section. And we usually like to do that if it's going to be in the bill so people don't look through the statutes for it when they're going through the riders. That would just be added to this amendment. It's a technical.
Mr. Chair, I'd incorporate that to the A3 amendment.
And
yes, it does, but I'll explain why.
Okay. Mr. Watson?
Mr. Chairman, you were just wondering whether this matched up with the bill since it says page 51, delete section 8. And to the naked eye, it looks as though section 8 is not on page 51. But if you look very carefully at the top of page 52, you'll see that indeed section 8 is on line 51.33. At the bottom it says 52, but at the top it's 51. So.
Oh, okay.
That's why I wondered.
It's a glitch in the computer system.
Very interesting. Okay. Yeah, so we're just replacing the language of this section.
Mr. Funny. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf.
Just Senator Anderson, on the bottom of the last sentence on subdivision 5 where it says interest payable on the loan amount may not exceed more than 1.5%, is that the these are revenue bonds that are sold?
Oh, Mr. Chair, this is not bonding. This is just a straight loan program from the Department of Commerce that would where individuals who are trying to put together a wind development project would come to Commerce and apply for a loan for, you know, primarily what we're looking at is for the wind studies to determine what your feasibility of having a good project on that site, and also the interconnection studies that you have to do with MISO, the transmission grid administrator for the Midwest region. Those are very expensive. They cost in the tens of thousands of dollars, and so we're trying to help get some money available for those individuals to come to Commerce and ask for a loan, and then they'd have to repay it. So it would be cash, and it would be a revolving loan.
So the 1.5% is just kind of a base figure?
Well, did you add that? Yeah, I don't think we had that before. I was contemplating possibly no interest or low interest loans, and I guess this is part of what Mr. Bull is recommending, that we have a 1.5% limit on interest that could be charged for these loans. And I think it says in here that can cover your administrative costs.
And Senator Anderson, is so this is different from the grants and the one-time money?
Yes. There's two different pieces to my bill. And if you'd like, I can explain that briefly.
Well, I think you went through that with the one-time money, or at least you highlighted that, but this is the other program.
This is the revolving loan program. The other piece in the one-time bill is to set up a project that will provide technical and financial and legal assistance to wind developers through a grant.
And what you're doing with this one again is, as you mentioned, you're just refining the language that we find on page 52.
As requested by the administration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Further discussion on the A3 amendment. If not, all those in favor? I think Senator Anderson has moved the amendment. If no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I have two more, or one more, two more. I have the A8 amendment, which is, again, this is changes that were requested by Mr. Bull. This is another Mike Bull amendment that he has worked out with the people who are working on the hydrogen initiative proposal, and these are just some mostly technical changes to the wording. Primarily what it does is it takes the Pollution Control Agency out of the consultation process and leaves it in Commerce and makes sure that we're talking about renewable hydrogen. And so that's, I think, pretty much what this amendment does. If there's anything else major. But it's all, the language has been worked out with Mr. Nordstrom, who has proposed the renewable hydrogen initiative, who I worked with on my bill. So, again, this language came to us too late to incorporate into my omnibus bill, so we'd like to offer that here on the request of the administration, who will be administering this program, so we wanted to make sure it will work for them.
All right, if we've had the AA amendment distributed, questions on the AA amendment, discussion? Senator Anderson, excuse me, moves adoption of the AA amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Anderson.
Okay, Mr. Chair, one more amendment that's, where'd you go? Was that the request of Senator Saltzman? The A6 amendment. And essentially what this will do is to transfer some money from the PCA's remediation fund to the health department to do a study or evaluation of the types of filtration devices that are necessary to filter out certain chemicals from water, in drinking water. And Senator Saltzman has worked with the Department of Health as well as with the PCA commissioner on this issue, and they have agreed to, you know, they're in agreement with this proposal. So, Mr. Chair, I don't know if you want a little...
Senator Saltzman, is there anything you'd like to offer on the amendment?
At this time, this was a bill that was heard in Senator Berglund's committee, and she had appropriated approximately $570,000 for it. And over the past few days, we've looked at other options where there are three chemicals, and PFBA is a new chemical that was just discovered in the last year. It's a four-carbon chemical, and because of its nature, it's just recently been able to be discovered and detected. We're not sure if water filters work to take it out. And so this study is something that in Woodbury and Cottage Grove and this area where we found on the PFBAs is very important to our cities to be able to, you know, give people an option if they want to remove the chemicals while there's further discussion on what the permanent healthy drinking a level is. There are studies going on right now that determine that. So in the health bill right now, there is $40,000 to cover the PFBA. PFOA and PFOS are two chemicals that are now being considered for the hazardous substance and so would be able to be covered by the fund in the PCA. And John Linkstein is here. He is from the Department of Health, and he would be involved in this water filter study and perhaps could give you some more background on that.
And is this an open appropriation, or is there?
No. Well, I don't know what to say about that terminology. I'm not sure. There's an agreement as to the cost, I believe, and that the PCA would attempt to recover the cost from the responsible party. That's how the remediation fund works. So it's not. It's revenue neutral as to our bill. But
I understand it's revenue neutral. Sure. I just wondered about. It just talks about an amount necessary and doesn't offer any parameters.
That's a good question. Is there a specific dollar amount that's been agreed to?
Mr. Chair, if I could just offer a response. My name is John Stein. I'm Director of Environmental Health, Minnesota Department of Health. The cost of the study involved is around $570,000 total cost for this study. Once the study is completed, there will no longer need to be any further allocation to the Minnesota Department of Health from the Pollution Control Agency.
Okay, and Senator Anderson, you're comfortable with just keeping this language as opposed to specifying a figure of $600,000?
Yeah, I think that you're, Mr. Chair, I think you raise a good point that we might want to have a dollar amount in here so that there's some accountability for the dollars. And I just got the amendment today and I hadn't really noticed. That's a very good point that you make. So maybe we could add that in.
Mr. Watson, you want to suggest some language?
Mr. Chairman, is it your desire to permit it up to $600,000?
Sounds like that would be the way to go. So,
Mr. Chairman, while counsel is working on that, could I ask another question?
Sure.
Different. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stein, this. It states the evaluation must be done by December 31st, 2007. Is that enough time to do the evaluation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson, we believe it is. We've gotten some feedback from the National Sanitation Foundation as well as other independent groups that are able to contract for this work, and it does appear that that's a sufficient amount of time.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stein, would there be Would it be advantageous to give you a little longer time than that? Is there an urgency to have it done by the 1st of January 2008? Or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson, there is an interest in the community of having an answer as quickly as possible. As an agency conducting work, it's always advantageous to have a little bit more time to assure that the work gets completed, but I'm also sensitive to the fact that the local community members and some of the elected officials are very interested in getting this done quickly.
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, there's residents who are want to buy a water filter system for their home or some kind of filter for their water, and they just don't know what to buy because they don't have enough information about what would effectively filter out these chemicals that have been found in their drinking water. So it is an urgent matter.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I assume they would move forward as quickly as they could, but I've seen appropriations like this where the agency has come back in, said they weren't able to get the contract signed, other things happened, and they have a bill early in the session to give themselves another 90 days to complete the task or whatever. That's why I was asking the question.
That's a good question. Would you be okay with it? You're comfortable with it?
Fine.
Oh, to have more time?
As long as Senator Saltzman doesn't have a problem in the community.
You know, Mr. Chair, I guess, you know, to have the flexibility is good. What's happening right now is that every time we have any community meeting on this issue, there are flyers on cars to buy this water filter or that, and we're not really sure they work or how long they last. And that seems to be the big issue, is that they work, but we're not sure for how long. It could be 30 days or 90 days. And that's part of this study to study and to look at. So having flexibility is great, but I think we'd like it done as soon as possible.
Mr. Chair, we don't know yet when the next legislative session starts, do we?
No.
There's no date set, so.
Okay, Mr. Watson, do you?
Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 3, delete and insert the. And then on line 4, after necessary, insert comma, up to $600,000, comma.
Senator Anderson, Senator
Could
Saltzman?
Could I incorporate that into
the amendment,
Mr. Chair?
Okay. Further discussion on the A6 amendment. If not, all is in favor. Senator Anderson moves the A6 amendment. No further discussion. All is in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any other amendments. I had a request, which we can take now or later, for a small amount of testimony, but I guess it's up to you. I think members have some amendments they'd like to offer.
If there are none, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A9 amendment. Mr. Chairman, would you like me to explain it while it's being passed out?
Okay, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is policy language that was in a bill introduced by Senator Steven to accompany the dollars that are already in the bill to establish an environmental health tracking and biomonitoring system in Minnesota. And Senator Anderson is aware of this, and I think the policy language, again, just wasn't quite ready or worked out in time to be incorporated into her bill. And it's ready now, and Senator Steven asked me if I would offer it to the Finance Committee. So the money is already in the bill. This is just the policy language that goes along with it.
Okay. It's not quite ready, though.
Mr. Chair, I believe that Senator Steven has discussed this language in the Health Committee. She's also discussed it in my committee. And I had some discussion back and forth about which committee should really, which bill should track this language. And so we decided that it made sense to put it in this bill because the money is in this bill, even though it relates to the health department. So by and large, but not partly. So.
Okay. But Section 65, and that might be fine. Section 65, however, has blank appropriations.
So it should be deleted.
Deleted.
Oops. Yeah. Okay.
So you want?
I'll just move to delete Section 65.
Sorry.
All right. So you're offering Senator Pappas Section 58 to Section 64, is that
right.
Correct? Okay.
Yeah.
Sarah Sieben, is there something you'd like to offer to us? Or
no,
you're
just
joining us?
Mr. Good. Chair, just here for the pleasure of seeing everyone and
nice
see
to
if
have
you have any questions.
Okay. Senator Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I'm comfortable with amending this into the bill.
Okay. So Senator Pappas moves the A9 amendment minus Section 65. All those in favor signify. Senator Stumpf.
There's a lot of language here that I haven't seen before. What exactly? We don't have a fiscal section, but I mean, now that we took that out, but a training program that is culturally sensitive, specifically for healthcare providers, health educators, and other program administrators. I mean, there must be some cost that relates to that.
Mr. Chairman,
a design designation
Mr. Chairman,
process
Stump.
For private laboratories.
Senator Stump, maybe I spoke too quickly. There is money in Senator Anderson's bill to pay for this. I think there's $500,000 a year.
Yeah. In fact, maybe to be fair to Senator Stump, Senator Anderson, could you reference where the money is?
Yeah,
I should have asked that.
And Mr. Chair, we did go through this with a spreadsheet, but it's funding that is in my bill, and we had originally thought we should just send the language to Senator Berglund's committee. And so that's why we have the confusion, and it does make – we thought it made more sense to have the money and the language be in the same place. So
it's on line 19 of the spreadsheet.
And, Mr. Chairman, in the bill, it's in on page 6, line 34, it starts, and it carries over to page 7. And there it has $500,000 per year coming out of the Environmental Fund, which is a fund under the PCA. They would keep $100,000 of it to whatever role they play in this – amendment, and then transfer the other $400,000 per year to the Department of Health.
Well, I'd be interested to know whether the Department of Health or the PCA can comply with this.
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, the Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Health have been working with me on this language, and we have pared it down significantly so that it is it can fit into the appropriation that's in Senator Anderson's bill. John Stein, who spoke on the previous bill, is still here, and he can answer any questions you have too.
Did you want to finish this question?
What are we looking for language?
Mr. Chair, John Stein, Director for Environmental Health at Minnesota Department of Health. Senator Stumpf, question I believe you asked was can we deliver the work that's described in the bill for the amount of money that's in this allocation? Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stein, yes, I would like to know whether you fully are aware of what they're asking you to do or the agency to do, and whether that's feasible with the dollar amount.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, we have reviewed the language, and we're continuing to review the language of the bill. This is the first time I've seen the bill or the amendment in this form. In general, though, there are elements of this language that can be successfully implemented.
I'm not sure that's a real strong endorsement.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask the witness, what examples could you give us on a chemical that you would be monitoring, and what is the function or purpose of this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, in the environmental health tracking arena, there is existing data that's collected on ambient air quality by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. There are reports of asthma incidences, reports of persons who present emergency rooms for cases of severe asthma attack that is an example of the sorts of things you would use under environmental health tracking to look at the prevalence of those sorts of reports and ambient air quality data to then suggest what additional areas of research or data collection might be beneficial to look at the prevalence of that condition. The environmental health tracking component of this bill is really intended to work toward associating environmental exposures with public health concerns. And it is not necessarily a tool that answers all questions as much as it may suggest additional areas of research and monitoring that may be beneficial for public health purposes.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just add in the second section of the bill that relates to the biomonitoring pilot program, it's under Section 63. That specifically only refers to perfluorinated chemicals, which is what Senator Saltzman referenced in the previous amendment that went on. The idea being here that Minnesota has had an especially large incidence of exposure to perfluorinated chemicals because of the production in the state, and this would establish a biomonitoring program to specifically test people's exposure, voluntary participants' exposure to perfluorinated chemicals. And that's only what's allowed for in this section.
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I've got a question or two. Page 39. On line 18, it refers to a resident who served at any time during the preceding 24 months. And then if you go down to line 25, it refers to served at any time during the proceeding 24 months.
It's a typo.
I think it should be the preceding 24 months on line 25.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, you have an eagle eye, and I think it's just a typo. It should be preceding in both of those cases, I would think.
I'll move, Mr. Chair, on page 39, line 25, to change proceeding to preceding.
And does staff have that? Members, you've heard the technical amendment? Discussion.
That's an important technical amendment, though.
Hearing no further discussion, proceed to vote. All those in favor of the Betzel amendment indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. The amendment's adopted.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, I do have a question or two. I noticed a couple of references to rulemaking, and I didn't quite hear whether or not – I knew some of these bills were traveling, but I did not exactly hear whether or not they had been reviewed by the – State Local Government Operations Committee. I just want to double check on that. On page 36, lines 12 to 16, there's a fees that are scheduled, and it says they're not subject to rulemaking provisions. I believe it was referred to this is a, this may be part of a Senate file 1250, I believe, by Sarah Scogan, and I don't know whether this bill had actually, that part had been reviewed by the
Mr. Chair.
Committee.
Senator Anderson.
It was reviewed by the State and Local
okay.
Government Committee.
If we could also, on page 37, lines 21 to 23, apparently this Senate file 399, Senator Erickson Ropes, Commission may adopt rules, may use a rulemaking process. Did that also go through that committee then?
Mr. Chair, Senator Betzel, we don't think that one did, and I can't remember if the rulemaking was in the original bill or not. It was, okay, because this was, we amended the bill quite significantly during my last day of hearing bills in committee to change it to a voluntary program, and so I'm not sure if it's necessary to have rulemaking in this or not. If we can,
if she wanted it, she wanted
if that's a problem with having it in the bill, I think we'll have to take it out. but I don't know what the department, where's Mr. Meyer? Just tell her say about that. He's on the phone? Okay.
Well, maybe I, well, somebody's coming up right now.
It would be Mr. Bagas is from the DNR.
No, Mr. Chair and Senator, yeah. Since there's a provision already in statute, I don't know whether this is creating rulemaking or not, or using as exemption. I just don't know what it refers to. So,
Mr. Chair and Ed Bagas with DNR Division of Fish and Wildlife and Senator Betzold, this is our what we refer to as our expedited or annual rulemaking process that DNR uses to set seasons, to select hunters, to set bag limits, quotas. Rules adopted under this section can be valid for up to 18 months. And it just makes it clear that we can use that same authority that we use for annual seasons and quotas and lotteries to set the fee for reimbursing processors.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Betzold, I just learned that this bill was not requested by Senator Rest Committee.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, on page 43, the new language, lines 12 to 16, the last sentence says that the fees are not subject to the rulemaking provisions of Chapter 14. And I'm just wondering if that had been reviewed, and if not, why would these fees not be subject to rulemaking? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, that's also part of Senate File 1250.
Okay. It was the same, the deer license one?
Senator Scogin's bill, that did go to Senator Raskin.
Oh, that was reviewed then. Okay, fine. Okay. Mr. Chair, I do have one other question. I noticed there's about 7 one-time appropriations in this bill, and I just don't know what the guidance was anymore. What our budget divisions were supposed to do on one-time appropriations.
We do one time.
Is it appropriate, not appropriate? I don't know. There's about 7 one-time appropriations in this bill, and I thought we were supposed to segregate the one-time appropriations out from the budget bills, but Senator Vickerman had his in, and Senator Anderson has about 7 in here.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
We don't. Mr. Chair, I don't believe, my staff is telling me here, they don't believe that any of the one-time appropriations are general fund. They're from special funds.
Okay.
And so.
Okay.
Because the one-time money allowed finance committee.
Okay.
So there's a lot of special funds, obviously, in these agencies.
Okay.
So, great, thank you. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make a special mention in here. I had put in my bill a requirement that Xcel pay into the Renewable Development Fund for the new cast that they intend to store at the Monticello plant, and unfortunately wasn't able to have any testimony on that in my committee because we ran out of time, and I felt badly about it. And if Xcel and one proponent wished to speak to that, I had asked you, Mr. Chair, if that would be okay, if they could give some brief testimony on that issue.
Senator Anderson, that would be okay. I'm sorry this didn't happen in your division.
I am too.
On an issue of this importance, but if there are a couple of people you'd like to have testify for a couple of minutes, I don't want to get into a long debate in the full committee.
Mr. Chair, I think it would be very brief.
So, Senator Anderson, we're the...
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Jim Alders from Xcel Energy. My title is Manager of Regulatory Projects. I have been involved in pursuing approvals from the Public Utility Commission for spent fuel storage at the Monticello plant and the extension of the life of that facility for another 20 years. I've also appeared before several committees over the years on various nuclear waste matters. Thank you, Senator, for giving us the opportunity. to speak. Xcel Energy is here to speak in opposition to Article 2, Section 7, which Senator Anderson summarized for you. The section would increase annual payments or installments to the Renewable Development Fund. Currently, Xcel Energy provides $16 million a year. The provision would double that to $32 million a year with the addition of spent nuclear fuel storage at Monticello. The theme of our comment, and I'll keep my comments brief, Mr. Chairman, is we think that in the environment we find ourselves in today, we ought to look forward instead of looking back when establishing how to fund renewable development R&D. Back in 1994, the debate was how do we develop renewables in exchange for the storage of spent nuclear fuel at Prairie Island? How do we examine what needs to be done so that perhaps someday we can replace nuclear power with renewables? In 2003, we tried to write a new page by establishing a procedure before the Public Utility Commission where the commission was your fact finder, looked into whether it was prudent to continue to operate spent nuclear power plants, whether it was prudent to expand spent nuclear fuel storage at our nuclear power plants. And in that whole process, rather than a fee per cask per year to be dedicated to renewables development, a flat fee of $16 million a year for storage of spent fuel and the operation of the Prairie Island nuclear power plant was established. It was a step toward delinking spent nuclear fuel storage from renewables development. We think that that's gone even further, especially in this session of the legislature, in which you said all the utilities in the state are going to pursue aggressive renewable development alternatives associated with the bill that establishes 25 and 30% renewables requirements for the way in which we provide power to our customers going forward. It's no longer about an exchange between the operation of nuclear power plants and what our renewables future is going to be. It's really about both. Xcel Energy is pursuing a mix of resources that will limit or even reduce the amount of greenhouse gases that our power plants emit. We're converting coal plants in the metropolitan area to improve air quality. We've proposed similar projects at the largest single coal-fired power plant remaining in the state, that is the Sherco Power Plant in Becker. We are the largest purchaser of wind power in the country. We have made all kinds of commitments and are one of the nationally recognized companies when it comes to exploring how we can conserve and manage the use of electricity. Nuclear power is an essential part of all of that going forward. It's no longer about either or. It's about how do we pursue a mix of resources that will allow us to minimize the environmental impact of the production of electricity and keep the price of electricity as economical as possible. It's no longer about just Xcel Energy's customers paying for renewables. It's about how do all of the utilities in the state tackle an aggressive goal to increase the amount of renewables that our customers can rely on. We think going forward that as a matter of policy, rather than tying any increases of renewables development, R&D, to the use of nuclear power, serious consideration ought to be given to how all the utilities in the state, regardless of their current mix, of coal and oil and natural gas and other resources ought to participate in whatever renewables development R&D the state thinks needs to be pursued. A bargain was struck back in 2003 establishing this $16 million annually to be paid by Northern States Power Xcel Energy. We're not asking that that be changed. We're simply saying going forward, we don't think that additions to the renewables development R&D ought to be solely on the backs of our customers. It doesn't make sense to us for renewables to be paid for by people in Mankato and not by people in Owatonna, or people in South St. Paul, not on people that are in Lakeville or some other place. If you allocate all of that to Xcel Energy, you're capturing about half the customers in the state. The other half of the customers in the state, those of other utilities, aren't participating in the same way. And we don't think that nuclear power anymore is the dividing line between those that participate in renewables development, R&D, and those that don't.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Alders. Questions for Mr. Alders? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Bill Grant for the Isaac Walton League, and I also sit on the Renewable Development Fund Board representing the environmental community. Just a brief history, and I know some of the members that have been here longer recall this. This started with the 1994 Prairie Island legislation where $500,000 per cask per year was required of Xcel. In 1999, after 5 years of waiting, we did finally actually get the money begun to be spent through a negotiated agreement that put two environmentalists and two Xcel Energy members on the board to make those decisions about which projects should be funded. In 2003, as Mr. Alders said, we did change that from a per-cask fee to a flat $16 million per year. The rationale being that we need alternatives to nuclear power as long as we're storing nuclear waste within the state's borders. Therefore, new casks equals new money into the fund. The Renewable Development Fund is really focused on near commercial projects that are renewable energy alternatives that we need to get to market. There isn't another fund in the state that is providing support to projects that are in that category. We do this with both research and development support as well as project grants to specific projects that wouldn't be able to get to market but for the assistance provided by the Renewable Development Fund. Reviewing the spending from the fund, $42.5 million has been spent from the fund over the, 8 years now that the fund has been actually in operation on actual projects and R&D development, but another $44 million has been withdrawn from the fund for other legislative priorities. Most of these have been renewable energy projects in one way or the other, but they haven't been available to the discretion of the board. Senator Anderson's bill allows the fund to proceed at current levels while meeting demands for new projects like IRE, like CERTs, like solar and manure digester rebates from new RDF dollars from the Monticello plant. That said, Mr. Chairman, we're working closely with Xcel Energy, and in fact, I believe there's been a proposal from them on a per cask charge that we are reviewing currently and hope to continue working with Xcel on for the rest of the session.
And Mr. Chair, I have met with Xcel, and my staff has been talking with them quite a bit, and I want to make sure that we continue to talk about whether there is a compromise to be had here, and I certainly intend to try to find that if we can.
Okay. Questions for either witnesses, Mr. Grant or Mr. Alders, Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I have a few. I'd like to ask a couple questions, and I know we're running short of time, so I'll try to be concise. Mr. Alders, when does the license for operating Monticello expire? Or has it expired and PUC has extended it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, the NRC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, operating license for Monticello expires in 2010. The license, we have filed with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for an extension to that license to extend it to 2030. That extension has been granted.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Alders, if I remember correctly, our PUC also has to approve that extension, do they not?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, the Public Utility Commission here in Minnesota looked at the question whether or not spent fuel storage, additional spent fuel storage, should be allowed at the plant. And the Public Utility Commission found that, indeed, it was in the public interest to allow up to 30 additional spent fuel storage containers at the plant, which would facilitate the operation of the plant to 2030.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Alders, how long do you anticipate those casks will be stored at Monticello?
Mr. Chairman, it depends on how expeditiously the federal government meets their obligation to take spent fuel to a national repository. Currently, the feds say that they could have a facility operating in the 2020 time frame. But spent fuel then would move away from nuclear power plants all over the country over a period of a decade or two. So spent nuclear fuel is going to be at Monticello for a number of decades under any scenario.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions? Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if there's any other discussion. If not, I would move that Senate File 2096 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the floor of the Senate.
Okay, we have the Anderson motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Anderson. Senator Betzel, or let me just, Senator Betzel. So let's go with Senator Betzold then. Okay.
So people on this, we're gonna have some language.
On the floor, what's our session?
Which are you working on?
Well, we have schools? Schedule for the floor session on
health plan?
The Health and Human Services bill is up on the floor on Friday.
And is the tax bill on Friday?
No, the tax. Oh, I thought they were scheduled for taxes.
Senator Betzold.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 276 is a bill that the members of this Finance Committee should be familiar with. It's a it would create a statewide health insurance pool for school district employees. A very similar proposal actually passed the Senate in the 2005 session. This year's bill has some slight modifications to it. It had about a four-hour hearing in the over two sessions in the Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee. It had brief stops in the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, and then another rather lengthy hearing in the Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee. I will just briefly describe what is in the bill so that you are aware of it. Again, this creates a statewide health insurance pool under which school districts that are purchasing health insurance would have to purchase it from this pool. This bill would create a board of seven members appointed by the employer, seven by the employee groups, basically to provide a self-insurance pool. There are some fiscal issues in here, as I say, Mr. Chair, and I will just limit my review to those fiscal issues, some which may be apparent, some which may be less so. If you look on page 2, lines 14 to 16, the bill provided originally, as it went through the process, that the state would not be liable for any obligations of this public corporation. in the Health Committee, Senator Lynch had an amendment that was adopted saying that no eligible employer is liable for the debts, liabilities, or obligations of this public corporation, that is, the school districts. I don't know if that creates a fiscal issue for anybody, but it does say that in the event that this pool were to run into some problems, I don't know where the liability would be, but that is what it says. At the top of page 3, lines 1 and 2, it does say that the board members are eligible for compensation and reimbursement expenses, although the Commerce Department did point out to me just prior to the start of this hearing, it isn't quite clear how that is to be paid, and so we may need some slight language to do that. I will point out on page 5, this is an interest that Senator Berglund had, that this pool would have to be a contributing member to the MSHA fund. That was in the bill 2 years ago. It still is in the bill. The main fiscal issue here is on page 7, starting line 15. It did appropriate a base appropriation for $5 million as a one-time appropriation of the Commissioner of Commerce for startup funds as a loan. Now, Mr. Chair, in conversations with you, you've indicated that $5,000 is probably not going to be in the cards. When the actuarial studies were done about more than two or three years ago, it was looked at to having a $3 million startup cost. I believe that you had indicated that we'd more likely be looking at a $4 million one for here. The fiscal note reflects a $5 million one, but obviously that's because that's what the bill says. I would note again, and as I said, the Commerce Department did call to our attention that it isn't quite clear how the per diem would be paid. So perhaps we might need some language, perhaps on line 17, the one-time appropriation for the Commission of Commerce as a loan and per diem costs, or however it needs to be worked in there to reflect that as well. But as I say, Mr. Chair, that is just an oversight of the bill, overview of the bill, and the fiscal issues that I perceive them to be. And I know there are people who may wish to testify as to the policy on it, but as I say, this did have extensive policy airings in two committees in particular and brief stops in two other committees.
Okay, well, Senator Betzel, you and I have discussed an appropriation of $4 million as opposed to $5 million. And so I assume you'd like to move that language in. Did you want to suggest language, or have Mr. Watson suggest language on the rest?
Well, I'll move the $4 million for right now just to change it in the targets that you've identified. So, Mr. Chair, I'll move on page 7, line 16, change $5 million to $4 million.
Okay, we have the Betzel motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And I guess I should have indicated, Senator Betzel, that it would be the intent to have this bill go separately, although we will track it through the use of the one-time money. But in the one-time bill we have, that the amount if this bill passes will not be reflected in that bill. We'll continue to carry it in this bill.
And Mr. Chair, as I say, I don't quite know, and if we can resolve the per diem issue now, if we need to kick that over until a technical issue amendment on the floor, that's fine. But as I say, it was just pointed out to me that although we provide the per diem is to be paid, and again, that language is at the very top of page 3, lines 1 and 2, for the board members, it isn't quite clear on the appropriation that would come. It may come out of that loan, but the fiscal note indicates an additional sum for the per diem. I would suspect that we could probably take the per diem out of the loan, but it doesn't exactly say that. And so I don't have anything further to present to the committee, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A14 amendment.
Okay, do we have the amendment?
Oh, we don't have the amendment.
We have them at once.
Nope. I forgot to check to see if we have copies. Maybe we could.
Mr. Chairman? I do have a note here, 50 copies for 8:30 a.m. The copies have been made. The question is, where are they?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I could make it orally. It's very simple.
Last meeting.
And the question is, where do they
go? Two word changes.
Since the last meeting.
Mr. Chairman, on page 3, line 29, delete approved and insert reviewed. Page 3, line 29, delete approved and insert reviewed. Page 4, line 4, delete approve and insert review. Mr. Chairman, I understand, and certainly Senator Betzel can comment on this, but I thought that approved by the Commissioner of Commerce was a little strong in terms of the intent here. Certainly we don't, you know, it might be important for the Commissioner of Commerce to review the plan and the proposal, but I don't know that they should have approval authority. That seemed a little strong to me, so I wanted to change it to review.
Senator Frederickson.
Chairman, Senator Betzel, did your bill go through Commerce Committee?
Yeah, we had about a four-hour hearing in the Commerce Committee, Mr. Chair. Just as a clarification, Mr. Chair, I believe this would have to be made in three places.
Well, Senator Betzel, right.
But
I think you're right on line 32 as
32,
well.
29, 32, and line 4, right.
I would add.
Senator Pappas, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Was the language?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll.
I think we're running off copies.
Sure.
Why don't we wait for just a second then? Senator Frederickson?
My question was this is a finance committee, and this looks like an issue that would be under the purview of the Commerce Committee, and we're making a policy change in finance committee after the bill has been through a policy committee.
Mr. Chair,
I'm nervous about doing that. It puts those of us who don't happen to serve on that committee in a very awkward position.
Yeah. And I'll address the history of this. In the Commerce Committee, Commissioner Representative did indicate that he had some concerns that there was no role of the Commerce Department in this health insurance pool. And so Senator Scheid offered the amendment for this language, and it was her amendment, and it was adopted in the Commerce Committee, and that is how the language came to be within this bill.
Mr.
Senator,
I realize any amendment can be made before a bill before the committee, but it would seem to be more appropriate if the amendment was made on the floor where Senator Scheid would have an opportunity to weigh in on her opinion of this change.
Senator Betzel?
I agree.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then I'll withdraw the amendment.
All right. Senator Pappas withdraws the A14 amendment. Senator Betzel?
Mr. Chair, as I said, and I don't know if we have anything on the per diem issue, but
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's assumed under the bill that administrative support for the board will be provided by the Commerce Department. Is that right?
I believe so, and
I don't think so.
No?
They would hire their own.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Gross. I'm with the Department of Commerce. I'm the Director of Healthcare Policy. I apologize to Senator Betzel for this, that we're coming in kind of late on this. But one of our concerns was that the committee would get $5 million. And then the question was, is Department's Commerce role to make sure that money is properly administered out when they have expenses, or would we just give the $5 million to this group of 14 and they would take care of their own allocations and expenses? We're just trying to get a clarification. What is the role of Commerce Department in this for the per diem and expenses that the board members might incur?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, as I said, I had assumed that the Commerce would be providing administrative support to the board. That would be an ordinary arrangement. If that were what you wanted to do, then on page 3 after line 6, you'd insert a new paragraph G. The Commissioner of Commerce shall provide administrative support to the board. Then in the appropriation, which is to the Commissioner of Commerce. There's just one change I would make there on line 7.17 at the end of the line, delete to and insert of. So that's the startup costs of the Minnesota School Employees Insurance Board. That way the Commissioner of Commerce has all the money and is to provide the services, including the payment of per diems or per diems, for the benefit of the board members. Does that work? So the witness is nodding in the affirmative.
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is. Thank you.
If it works, Mr. Chair, then I'll move the amendment as read by counsel.
To restate it, Mr. Chairman, page 3, after line 6, insert paragraph G, the Commissioner of Commerce shall provide administrative support to the board. And then on page 7, line 17, delete the final 2 and insert of.
Okay, and Senator Betzel, you're offering that amendment?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we have Senator Betzel's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chair, if there's no one else to be heard on this one or no other concerns of the committee, I will move the Senate File 276 as amended, be recommended, pass, and be referred to the floor.
Okay, we have the Betzold motion in front of us.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Stump.
And this is for the Department of Commerce, too, and I apologize. I didn't catch it quick enough. But this was brought up by Senator Betzel. And I think it has to do with the liability of the department.
Didn't I?
Could you reiterate what that you mentioned the concern about who's responsible?
Different world.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, The bill, as we had it previously and as it worked its way through the committee process this year, had the language that the state would not be liable for the obligations of this public corporation. In the Health Committee, and of course, no one ever starts anything up thinking it's going to fail, but you have to keep that in mind. In the Health Committee, Senator Lynch offered an amendment saying that no eligible employer at a school district is liable for the debts, liabilities, or obligations of this public corporation. Also makes sense. From a overall fiscal standpoint, I don't know where this would leave anything if the thing were to fail. I don't know what the issue would be as to who would be liable, if anybody. I pointed it out to the committee because I'm not sure, quite sure where this leaves anything. I don't think it added much, really, to say that the school districts would be liable, because I don't think they would have been in the first place. But Senator Lynch wanted the language in there, and it's there, and that's what the bill reads right now.
All right. We have Senator Betzel's motion that Senate File 276 says amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Betzel.
Okay.
And members, if I could just ask for your indulgence for 30 seconds.
Is he ready?
Okay, David.
I doubt it.
Are you in state government?
No.
Okay, members, we then have the denouement of the evening, Senate File 2089, Senator Tomassoni.
Is that French?
I don't know any Italian.
Are his amendments ready?
Mr. Chairman and members, after listening to the sage advice of the committee, we have gone through the process of trying to put this into the form that the committee will find acceptable. Mr. Chairman, is there an A3 amendment up there? Because maybe this is the one to start with, because Senator Chaudhry is here and he's been waiting around. I don't know if you have an A3 amendment or not.
No, I don't have an A3.
While we're looking at that and getting
A10.
Okay, Senator Thomas Tony, Mr. Watson does have some amendments available.
Okay, I'll save that for until it's up here. The A-10 amendment, Mr. Chairman, was in response to the committee's concern about some of the things that are in the bill and whether or not they should be there and had they gone through the process. And so what the A-10 amendment does is on page 36, it deletes section 43, which is the Poet Laureate section. Then on pages 40 to 44, it deletes sections 49 to 53, which are the racetrack provisions. On page 63, it deletes subdivision 10, which was a provision of the contractor recovery fund, which was deleted in judiciary. And then on page 68, it also deletes section 76, which is the racetrack study. And so that's the A-10 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
I'd move that amendment.
Sure.
Okay. Senator Stumpf moves adoption of the A-10 amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, I don't know that anyone in the Finance Committee expressed, at least not orally, a concern about the Poet Laureate section 43.
Mr. Chairman.
What's the problem with that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, it was Senator Rest that she would want the bill in her committee if it stayed in there, and so based on that, I removed it. But if this committee would like to leave it here, I'm fine with it. But I think it might slow up the bill
Mr.
again.
Mr. Chairman, if Senator Boyd Rest, she didn't hear the bill,
All right. So we have the A-10 amendment. Further discussion on the A-10 amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Tomasoni.
Then, Mr. Chairman, there's an A-9 amendment.
The gaming.
Just this one.
Horse track.
And, Mr. Chairman, while they're handing out the A-9 amendment, the A-9 amendment is the went through both Senator Metzen's and Senator Moore's committee today, and there were two little changes to the amendment, and it's in regard to the prevailing wage part of the bill, and it's on page 36, line 31. And in Senator Metzen's committee, the statutory references were corrected. And then in Senator Moore's committee, they changed some of the language. So it's everybody's happy with it, and the department is agreeable to it. And this is giving the department the ability to police prevailing wage violations. And it's some authority that they currently do not have, and we've been discussing this with them, and everybody has agreed to this language, as far as I know.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that.
Senator Stump.
Move the amendment.
Okay, and Senator Tomasoni, this is section 44, and so you were in Senator Moore's committee today to discuss this.
Yes, and we were also in Senator Metzen's committee, so we went through both committees that had jurisdiction, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzen, that's
yes, we had an extensive hearing.
We had an hour and 10-minute hearing waiting for a quorum.
Okay. All right. We have the A-9 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chairman, we have has anybody found an A-3 amendment yet? Maybe what I can do here, Mr. Chairman, is
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, I do have an original of the A-3.
Okay, then that must be the one, or is it not?
No.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chairman. Maybe the best thing to do, as long as Senator Chaudhry is here, while we're waiting for copies, to just have him explain this, or do you want someone else to explain it for you, or
I could talk about it.
Well. If we're just waiting for copies, are there other amendments, Senator Tomasoni?
I don't think we have them either. They're, like, getting ready. They just got passed out of Senator Rest Committee, and so they're fixing them up right now also.
So how many amendments do you expect to have?
Two more, I believe.
Okay. We're having copies made of one of them.
Wait, there could be a third amendment that you want to come up here and talk about this?
A bill up tonight, yes.
Mr. Chairman, this is a This is up to the committee to decide, because I realize the process was the issue here. But here is a bill by Senator Scheid that was not heard in my committee, but it is it's a licensing issue, and I'm told that as a result of the fee changes and whatever else is in this bill, that it's a revenue neutral. But I'll let the witness
explain. And is this language that's in the bill currently?
No, it's not, and it hasn't been heard in any committee that I knew of. So it's a new amendment, and you can decide to not do it, and that's fine with me. I'm trying to accommodate someone here, and if it doesn't work, that's fine. Well,
Mr. Betzold?
And I was sent a note on it. There is a Senate file 1628 that apparently is in the Finance Committee. I don't know of anything that would prevent Senator Tomasoni from still having more committee hearings to hear the bill and then refer it to the Finance Committee and have a report on the Finance Committee.
And that was my thought, if it was, particularly if it's revenue neutral.
I'm fine with that. I'm
okay.
I wanted to get the committee's opinion on it.
There's an opinion.
Okay, that's a good opinion. Okay, you're out of here.
Thank you.
Okay.
We got more opinions.
Okay. Then what do we? Which one did we come up with just now? The A3?
Yes.
Okay. The A3 then is Senator Chaudhry. This one went through all the committees that it had to go through, and it's here in Finance right now, as far as I know. And I don't know if you want to have Senator Chaudhry talk about it, Mr. Chairman, or if.
Okay. Senator Chaudhry said,
Mr. Chair, this is a bill, a consensus bill dealing with employee misclassification at 1099 independent contractors, and we're just basically setting up a certificate system for independent contractors in the construction industry. And it does have fiscal implications. Those are all worked out. Those implications were all resolved within the various committee deadlines. Senator Tomasoni simply just passed his omnibus bill out a few days early. And so my bill didn't actually get to his committee until after he had passed his omnibus bill out, but it was reviewed by his committee as well within the deadline.
And Senator Chaudhry, what's the fiscal impact of this amendment? Is there a fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, there is a fiscal note, but there is no fiscal impact. This was resolved by the fee structure that we've created in the bill.
And so is there a separate bill that's now in the Finance Committee?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay, I hate to ask the same question as we did previously. Why would we not have this bill simply passed out of the Finance Committee? If there's no fiscal impact and it's in the committee, is there a reason why we can't take this up?
Mr. Chair,
Rourke seemed to be jumping up.
There might be one reason, and that is because part of the resolution is that we are taking passing through the money through one of the accounts in within the Department of, can't remember which department, but it's a particular fund that we're taking it out of, and it might be helpful to have it within Senator Tomasoni's bill, particularly for reasons of for tracking, so that when we're accounting for that money on the spreadsheet, we have this language in the bill with it.
Is it labor and industry?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave.
Mr. Chairman, members.
That account.
This would be in the labor and industry department. The fees that are raised would go into a special revenue fund.
So there are fees in the. So there are fees in this.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, on page 7, lines.
Okay, well that would be
5 through 8. But that again is not general fund cost.
Well, I'm sorry. Okay, but there is a fee.
Yes, construction code fund is a special revenue fund.
Well, so Mr. Chair, it was my thought that since we're passing money through the construction code fund, that it might be wise to have the bill in with Senator Tomasoni's omnibus bill for tracking purposes.
Well, it makes me feel a little bit better if it does reference a fee, and so even if it's not against the general fund, there is a fee structured in the bill.
Mr. Chair, there's no opposition to this bill.
Okay. All right, we've got the A3 amendment questions. Is there anybody who wishes to move it?
Also vote, Mr. Chair.
And again, this language was heard in Senator Metzen's committee. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, it was...
Went through three committees, Mr. Chairman.
Three policy committees.
Two policy.
It was in Senator Scheid's Commerce Committee. It was in Judiciary.
I don't think I heard it, but...
And then it was in Senator Thomas-Sanders.
We have the A3 amendment. Senator Stumpf?
Just, and I hate to slow it up because I know it's late, but just in a couple words or a sentence or two, what actually are we doing here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, we're creating a independent contractor, construction contractor certificate, and the reason we're doing this is to help the Department of Revenue track revenue tax payments from independent contractors.
Okay. Senator Metzen has moved adoption of the A3 amendment. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman Frederickson. I have one other question. There is a new repealer in this. What is it that we're repealing?
Mr. Chair, we're repealing a law that we passed actually a year or two ago that created a civil action against a construction contractor by a citizen for violation of for committing employee misclassification. And so we're repealing that.
Okay, we have the A3 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Senator Tomassoni?
And then, Mr. Chairman, maybe Ms. Baker can explain. Yeah, that was adopted. What's going on now?
Mr. Chair, two other sections of this bill that needed to go through policy committees. One was the plumbing board, and the other was the high-pressure piping board. They just went through state and local and were amended quite a bit. There's about – each one has about a three-page page-and-line amendment and maybe half a dozen to a dozen oral amendments. We just got those 10 minutes ago. They're being engrossed in Senate Council. It just can't happen in 10 minutes, though. It takes a bit – a little more time to actually get it up here.
Okay.
And even then, I won't have had time to proofread it. So if we could have some time.
Okay, let me just – I might want to talk to Senator Tomassoni for a second, but Ms. Baker, what would the timing be of the preparation of these amendments?
I'm probably, Mr. Chair, expecting to see them within 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
They're working on them now.
And Senator Tomassoni, what else do you have for the bill?
I believe that's all I have.
I can go check, Senator Chair. It doesn't help to breathe down their necks, though.
But these amendments are being worked on right now?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Senator Tomassoni, we're waiting for those amendments. Let me ask, are there other amendments members have, other questions about the bill itself?
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
I have an amendment. I'm going to ask, it's not in writing, but I want to delete Section 45. This is my legislation that deals with the Packing House Workers' Bill of Rights. Got a bill on general orders, and I want to look at it a little bit more in depth. A lot of concern about this language, and I want to – it is clearly just policy, and it's my legislation, and not dropping it by any sense, but I want to look at it and maybe make some revisions. So I talked to Senator Tomasoni about it, and I don't know where he is on it, but anyway, it is.
So you're moving to delete Section 45.
Delete Section 45, yeah. And we're not dropping it, but I've got a full bill going in another general order, so.
All right, we have Senator Metzen's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Are there further amendments from committee members on the bill separate from what Senator Tomasoni would like to have offered? If we could recess for just a few seconds. Senator Tomasoni, could I see you here? Maybe with Cap.
But anyway, she was...
Listen.